Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. So we have another really special day at Action Radio. We've got David Stockman calling in the second hour. And for those that aren't familiar, David Stockman was the budget director, so the Office of Management and Budget during the Reagan administration. I got a little bio for him here. I was reading it over earlier. In fact, whenever I get one of these major public figure interviews, I always overprepare. You know, I get that for like 4 hours worth of interview. He might only be here for half an hour, but it doesn't matter because the main reason I wanted him here was to ask him about our constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. And so that I'm pretty sure nobody's ever asked him, at least of all the government people, because that's how they function, is on borrowed money. But borrowed money is the source of inflation. That's what creates it. The government borrows, government spends money they don't have, so they have to borrow the money. They have to increase the national debt. Then they have to cover that debt somehow by printing money that, in other words, to spend on their borrowed debt. And I'm not sure exactly how all it works. David will know. I'm going to ask him, how does that work exactly? So that might be a really good question. I'll add it to my long list of questions. As to how all this works. So we'll see. Let me see where I can put that. It's live radio. I can put it in there somewhere. So let's put, where would I put that? How government debt, how government, hang on, G-O-V-T, debt. What am I putting down? Government debt, increase inflation. Roadmap. Live radio, I can do this. So anyway, but that's how things happen here a lot of times. It's like, oh, I get it. Yeah, and this is why I don't, even though I over-prep for things, it doesn't really matter because I'm going to think of stuff to ask him during the interview anyway. But that's what I want to know. So his book is called, let me get his book title up here. It's called, I got to find where I put it. There we go. Otherwise, I'm going to be in real trouble. So it's called The Great Money Bubble, Protect Yourself from the Coming Inflation. Well, I think it's kind of here. And so then we'll find out from there. Anyway, so I want to find out what a money bubble is, and I want to find out, you know, his views on inflation. And if we get time, we can go into all kinds of things. You know, the difference between Reagan and Trump, you know, the whole idea of inflation, you know, whether we need a Fed, you know, what can happen if we stabilize the amount of dollars in the economy. And what about deflation? This is the thing that nobody ever talks about, is deflation. And it seems like the one thing that the economists and the government people are afraid of the most is the thing that's probably going to be that's going to help us the most, which is deflation. And I figure if inflation increases, the result of inflation, in other words, increasing the money supply, creates inflation and makes everything more expensive and causes prices to rise. Well, wouldn't deflation, in other words, contraction of the money supply, in other words, the amount of dollars in circulation, wouldn't that cause prices to fall? You know, I mean, it seems to make sense. And if it doesn't, then we gotta look at our economic principles and you know, founding theories, because that's kind of what it seems to be. So I don't know if one is true as the other true. What, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. I know. Let's take Newtonian physics. That would be Isaac Newton. For those that aren't familiar with the word, and let's, you know, we can apply that. In fact, I'm gonna ask him too about this thing that I found earlier, quantum economics. David Orrell. Let's see if he's heard about him. I'm sure he's heard about him. Let's see what he thinks of him. You know, so all these things we can ask. And again, I can't take calls during his interview because that's probably going to be short, and I'll be busy anyway. So if you want to type in a question in the live chat, that's probably your best bet to get something through. But otherwise, it's going to be a busy day. You got me the first hour. We've got David Stockman for I don't know how much of the second. I just keep asking questions until they have to leave. I'm pretty terrible about that. But, you know, I don't get a chance to do this that often. Who have I had big of late? In October, we got really lucky. We had both Wendy Rogers and Peter Navarro. Wendy Rogers, state senator from Arizona, Air Force pilot, really interesting person. Friend of Carrie Lake. We talked about Carrie Lake's candidacy before the election. Peter Navarro is Trump's senior advisor on trade, China policy, just a senior advisor to the administration. He's the one that got the 60 million hydroxychloroquine tablets ready to go. For to treat and get rid of COVID. And he knew. I mean, Trump said that there were like two or three advisors that told him just to ride out COVID, that it's not that big a deal. It's a flu bug. You know, it's like every other bug. And he was at, and whoever said that was absolutely right. I think Peter Navarro was one of those people. That's my speculation. So guess what didn't come up in the hearing yesterday? Peter Navarro and his 60 million hydroxychloroquine doses that could have or tablets that could have basically wiped out COVID. And that would have canceled Dr. Fauci's entire vaccine, you know, basically, you know, government medical holocaust plan. That's what I call it. It is a government medical holocaust. Well, I mean, not quite holocaust proportions. I don't know where exactly that starts. I don't like to inflate words unnecessarily. But the simple fact is that 1 million people died with things related to the government policy of COVID, and then probably all but 5% of them didn't have to. And so that's not just me. That's Dr. Zelenko said that. Peter McCullough basically said that yesterday. Some of the other folks, Dr. Pierre Corey, who's been on the show. I haven't had Peter McCullough on yet. It's only hopefully a matter of time. But it was a fascinating hearing, both for what they said and what they didn't say. Guess what else they didn't say? Anybody who knows me knows what's coming, right? They didn't talk about vaccine product liability legislation. How about that? You know, and I'm going to talk to Jim Thorpe, who was there. Jim was part of the world's greatest doctors panel. And so Jim expressed on the show, so I'm not saying anything that didn't happen, that he didn't necessarily favor legislation. He didn't think that was the way to go. And I'm not quite sure what the substitute would be. But anyway, I want to talk to Jim because he was there at the hearing with Senator Johnson. And I will encourage him, if he didn't get a chance to talk to him, that we, if Dr. Thorpe didn't get a chance to talk to Senator Johnson about our vaccine product liability legislation and our cure for big tech, to end big tech censorship, that since they met, you know, they're in contact, maybe he can ask him directly, or possibly there's a contact person I can talk to directly in Senator Johnson's office that will allow us to talk about this directly, because I think I said directly like four times. Well, I'm very direct sometimes, but that's what I'm going to try and do, because that's the real work of the show. What we do on the air, this is the fun stuff. You know, I get to talk to people. I get to do all kinds of things, but the real work of Action Radio is off the air. It's writing the bills. It's the stuff behind the scenes. It's the contacts. It's the arrangements. It's the just even the basic administrative stuff that it takes to run a radio show. Anybody that has done this knows what I'm talking about. So there's a lot to it. And so yesterday's hearing, I mean, there's a lot to putting on that hearing. It's on Rumble. So you can go to I've got it on several of my pages at Action Radio Facebook pages, my own page. I think the Action Radio group, which is public. Anybody can take a look at that. Most of my posts are public now too. So it looks like Facebook, you know, they're just content to shadow ban me with a whole bunch of algorithms rather than just outright ban me, which seems to make everybody else upset. That's why my posts don't have thousands and thousands of views and likes and things like that, because what we're talking about here is unique in the world. And that's what I'll tell David Stockman. So it should be interesting. So let me see. So I had a bunch of things I wanted to cover in this hour. This is kind of open. So if you want to call me, 215-383-3832, feel free. So I wrote something here. This is from last night, maybe the night before. Time is like a sort of a, you know, a concept in the gray area, because awake or asleep, it all sort of flows together. So I wrote, now that the gelding GOP has surrendered the Senate to Democrat vote fraud, surrendering the House can't be far behind. Knew it. So I forecast for a long time that the Republicans are going to do anything possible to give up power, that they are content to be losers, that they will do everything in their power to be losers so they never have to take responsibility, because the natural leaders, the natural order, the Washington, D.C. wolf pack is dominated. The alphas, the Democrats, and the betas, the Republicans. And this is the way it is. You know, you don't have a firebrand Republican. The only firebrand Republican is the one they don't like, Donald Trump. And you got a few feisty people in the Senate and the House. I'm not saying that, you know, there are some folks I kind of like, you know, admire. Josh Hawley, what's his name? I can't think of it now. I got a picture in my head. But other folks, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, except that I think his wife invested heavily in Gilead, which makes remdesivir. So that kind of disqualifies him a bit. But otherwise, he does. His father, right? Or Ron Paul, does some great stuff. Tom Cotton, here we go. Tom Cotton, another senator in the House. My own Congressman Matt Gaetz, who I really wish would call the show, and some of the other folks, Jim Jordan, and one of the people who I think made a mistake by going to Truth Social. That's Devin Nunes. I wish he'd stayed in the House and run the Intelligence Committee, because he could have some really interesting times now with the Republicans, the majority in the House. I'm kind of surprised the Democrats haven't overturned that already, given the way they operate. Maybe it's just a matter of time. Or maybe because they know Kevin McCarthy is not going to do anything, that the House has already surrendered, so it can look like a symbolic victory without any substance behind it. In other words, even if the Republican House passes a bill, the Democrat Senate doesn't even have to look at it because they're in the majority. Because, you know, they stole, I believe they stole, you know, I don't have the votes in front of me, right? But I'm sure they stole that Raphael Warnock seat. I mean, how would a Marxist, black, you know, supremacist, you know, preacher, leftist, wacko Marxist get win in Georgia? It doesn't make any sense, you know, and so a lot of other things don't make sense. But they got their 51. It doesn't make sense that they count two independents as Democrats. Well, the Republicans should have changed that rule whenever they had a Senate majority, but they didn't. Okay, because they're geldings. They you know, they don't think ahead. Some of the other things that happened, counting the vice president, counting them as a member of the Senate for the purposes of committee chair, you know, majority is insane because the vice president isn't in the Senate. The vice president's the vice president. The vice president has their own office, and it's not on Capitol. It's not in the Capitol building. You know, it's over by the White House, I think it's in the executive office building. That's where the vice president hangs out when she's there. You know, and not traveling to some country to, you know, shake hands with people she doesn't understand, and et cetera, et cetera. But why would you count the vice president ever? Then we go for a Republican vice president too. Why would they ever be counted as part of the Senate? I mean, they come in there to break ties, but that's it. But they do that as vice president. They don't do it as a senator. So they're not senators. So they shouldn't be. So vice president should never be counted for party majority purposes in the Senate. And yet the geldings let that happen. So they've surrendered the Senate. They've surrendered it to Kamala Harris, and they've surrendered it to Raphael Warnock. They've surrendered it to the other leftists, Chuck Schumer, et cetera, et cetera. And they pretty much surrendered the House. It looks like if they put Kevin McCarthy in the speakership, because although he's talking a pretty good game now, he sounds like a Republican would sound. He really does. It's kind of interesting. He's very good at this. Paul Ryan also sounded like a Republican should sound too, and then proceeded to stop every genuine Republican initiative, every investigation, anything that meant anything. Was completely stopped by Paul Ryan, who was the deep state operative that I believe Kevin McCarthy is too. So that's where we stand. So I think the Republicans are doing what they do best, which is surrender. And I think it wouldn't surprise me if sometime before, if I were a Democrat, when would I do? I'd do it right before Christmas. I would quietly overturn just enough House seats to have the Democrats take back the majority. That's what I would do. And so my prediction is look for when everybody's celebrating Christmas, it might be the week between Christmas and New Year's when nobody's paying attention to anything, that a whole bunch of votes show up in Republican won congressional seats, particularly in California and Arizona, which seems to be a hotbed of corruption right now, that don't be surprised if two, whatever, however many seats, one over half. So in other words, the Democrats by New Year's Day will have 219. Members of the House, and the Republicans will then be the minority. Don't be surprised if that happens. Or they're just content to let it sit as it is because they know Kevin McCarthy's not going to do anything anyway. So either way, the Democrats win. So, you know, they can give Republicans the pretense that they're going to be on the right side of this, but they're really not. Okay, what else have I got here? Covered David Stockman, covered the Johnson hearings. Let's get to, let me do a minute or two on Obama, you know, the first Irish president. I'm teasing. I wrote something down here. I said, Obama is making the rounds blaming Congress for not illegally ending the Second Amendment for all American citizens for the completely unrelated murders at Sandy Hook. He says that people equally armed to murderers at the clubs defies common sense. Whose common sense would that be? So what we've got now is this connection that the left always makes between criminal murders and the rights of law-abiding Americans. Well, they have nothing in common. They never did. You know, somebody who, I don't know, lies, cheats, bribes, you know, does that, you know, and says, well, because people are lying, cheating, bribing, libeling, slandering, and doing all other kinds of nasty things with speech, you know, inspiring, something, a riot, what is it, causing an insurrection or a riot through speech, hate speech, whatever they want to call it, things like that. Well, hate speech's not illegal. That's a bad term. That's a bad example. But instigating a riot through speech or anything like that, whatever the criminal use of speech is, you know, they say, well, because people are libeling and slandering, then we can't have free speech because we've got to stop all the people that are exercising it normally, you know, so we get rid of the libel and the slander. Well, that's the same thing. That's like saying, well, we've got to take away guns from the honest people to stop criminals from doing murders. Well, the honest people have nothing to do with the criminals doing murders. In fact, the honest people are the cure to the criminals doing murders in public when they can catch them. You know, and so, but this connection, this constant connection, said, well, if we just get rid of the Second Amendment, then, you know, then the criminals will stop murdering people, which is absurd. But nobody calls them on it. I do. You know, that's like saying if we stop vintners from growing grapes, then nobody will drive drunk on wine. What? You know, that's the same thing. Or my favorite example, if we just get rid of the bank depositors, you know, we'll end bank robberies. Oh, come on. But it's the same example. So why would you tolerate, why would you laugh at my absurd examples? And why, not my, necessarily my listeners, but the people you know. And tell people that too. Say, wait a minute. So if you, so somehow if you get, if you take guns from the law abiding, that's going to stop criminals from robbing banks. That makes no sense. You know, so tell them, say, look, so your equivalent to gun control is to stop bank robberies by getting rid of the depositors. And they say, is that what you're saying? Because you know, that's what it comes to. But yeah, Obama comes out there, right, goes on stage and looks very serious and wears his gray suit, you know, kind of like a Wall Street, he's got like Wall Street gray, right? And he comes out there and says, well, the worst thing about my administration was we weren't able to you know, and I'll paraphrase, take away the rights of law-abiding Americans, which would have no effect on criminals. so that's what his greatest regret is, he couldn't take away the rights of law-abiding Americans using the excuse that that will somehow stop murders. That's his greatest regret. Very strange man, you know, and also the people that kind of put up with this. All right, let's totally change topics here. I want to, the balance of power had something else completely different in mind. And you really haven't heard it on the news, but I happen to know more of the backstory because I was personally involved with it. And so are friends of mine. And so what it concerns is the Maine lobster market. I'll pull a Rush Limbaugh here. Gee, Greg, how did you get from Obama gun control to Maine lobsters? Well, it's pretty simple. There is a radical environmentalist and very rich woman named Julie Packard. Julie Packard happens to be the daughter of David Packard, who started Hewlett Packard. And so it's fascinating how this happens. It's like Ray Kroc started McDonald's. Very conservative business guy, built McDonald's. I think I think he bought it and franchised it. He made it what it was. McDonald's started McDonald's. All right. You know, can you imagine if I started a restaurant, it'd be called Penglis's? Hey, you want to go get a, you know, you want to go to Penglis? It does have a good ring to it. I've never thought my name would be good on a product. But anyway, I digress. So back to Ray Kroc. So Ray Kroc took McDonald's, I guess they had maybe one or two or three restaurants, and built it into this mega multi-billion dollar corporation. Well, when he passed on, his wife, Mrs. Kroc, you know, was an ultra liberal, has a whole McDonald's foundation, and gives money to all the very things that Ray Kroc would be against. Fascinating. Now, I don't know what David Packard thinks of his lovely daughter, Julie, but Julie Packard has turned into a complete environmental wacko. How do I know that? Because I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, all right, and friends of mine were affected by what she did. So Julie Packard runs the Monterey Aquarium. The Monterey Aquarium is a hotbed of wacko environmental nonsense, you know, fake science, junk science, climate change idiocy, and their goal is to basically end fishing. I mean, all of it. You know, let's make the ocean safe. We don't want fishing anymore. Or if you do get seafood, it has to come from a farm. You know, farm fish, you know, where it's polluted, you know, where they feed them artificial food, where they genetically modify them and they completely destroy them. She probably wants us to eat bugs. Wouldn't surprise me. But I haven't found that in print, so I can't claim that. So Julie Packard runs the Monterey Aquarium. And where I found this out personally is when I was a tour guide on Fisherman's Wharf. So I used to drive ducks, you know, ride the ducks, okay, the duck boats, you know, the things that drive on land and then, you know, splash into the water. Yeah, I used to do that. And it had great sound effects and did a whole turn the whole bit. Well, friends of mine at the Alio de Lazio Fish Company, it's a multi-generational Italian California family that has a crab fishery, and you can go there, and they're great. They're friends of mine. I'm trying to get Angela on the show. It's like Angela and Annette are two sisters who run it now, and so they've been doing this for I guess most of their adult lives, and their fathers and their grandfathers did it too. And so this is the Alio de Lazio Fish Company. So you can look them up, and you can get Dungeness crab direct from them. So I'm not sure when it had to have been. Let me see. I've been here since 2017. You know, that's 5 years ago. So this would have been in 2014, 15, maybe 16, somewhere in there. How long was I in the tour biz? I'm trying to think. I left it after a while. No, there's probably two. So either 2014 or 2015, Julie Packard of the Monterey Bay Aquarium decided that nobody should be harvesting Dungeness crabs on the West Coast. Okay, so Dungeness crab, which is named for a town where they first found it in Dungeness, Washington, which is named for someplace in Scotland. They got Dungeness in Scotland, like Inverness. You know, I don't know why the Scottish developed such a hard accent to say, because everything they do sounds harsh, which is not. The Scottish are kind of cool. Although I didn't have a great time in Edinburgh, but that's another story. Anyway, so back to the west coast of California. And so these folks that at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, they don't want you to have seafood. And so what they did is they made the Dungeness crab season basically extend so far that it was almost non-existent one year. Maybe it was 2014. I'm trying to think. So anyway, that's what happened. And so they delayed the season. And you got to understand, Dungeness crab fishing is a San Francisco tradition that goes back to when they first discovered it. You know, the crab pots, and they had these little boats. They probably did it with sailboats in the 1700s. Were they in the 1700s? 1800s. Probably sailboats in the 1800s, and then they got motorized fishing boats. But it's been a tradition for generations, 1800s, 1900s. We fish for Dungeness crab. And California, being California, has always been really good about maintaining the Dungeness crab stock. For one thing, they only harvest the males. So the females are free to, you know, to breed and create, you know, 500,000, you know, baby crabs. Most of them don't survive, of course, because it's the ocean. Everything eats everything else in the ocean. But a whole bunch do. And so they only take the males. And so it's what you would call a sustainable business. So California has always very carefully managed the Dungeness crabs. So there's always been plenty of crabs in the ocean, plenty of crabs for us to eat. And for the most part, pretty much everybody was happy. Well, until Julie Packard. So Julie Packard comes along, the wacko environmentalist, and says that you can't fish. And somehow she got the California Fish and Game group to change. See, I'm going to confirm with Angela about this, exactly what happened. But they changed the algae bloom index to what was safe and what was not safe. So they made the standard far stricter. So I've for whatever parts per million of algae that were normal in San Francisco Bay, normal in the waters off San Francisco through the Golden Gate and out towards the Farallon Islands, where most of the crab fishing is done. The Farallons are beautiful. It's a wildlife sanctuary some 20 miles outside of the Golden Gate. See, the Golden Gate is where the Golden Gate Bridge goes over. It's not named for the bridge, folks. It's named for the harbor entrance. That's called the Golden Gate, gateway to the Gold Coast, Golden MNR Hills, 1849ers, you know, which the football team is named for. For those that don't know where the 49ers came from, it's from 1849, the Gold Rush. So it's called the Golden Gate. So the bridge that went over the Golden Gate is called the Golden Gate Bridge. Anyway, so the fishing season, the crab season, is a big deal in San Francisco. Columbus Day, the priest, might even be a bishop, I'm not sure, but the priest of the big old North Church in San Francisco. I mean, not that's Old North, that's Boston. I'm sorry, I get my cities mixed up. I used to live in Boston too. But North Beach, the Italian section of San Francisco, has a beautiful cathedral. Cathedral means the bishop is there. But anyway, it's a beautiful church, twin spires, the whole bit. You saw it in one of the Dirty Harry films. Anyway, it's there at North Beach, which is the Italian section. And so they have a parade on Columbus Day. And part of the parade, if I remember this correctly, I'm pretty sure I do, is that the priest goes down and does a blessing of the fishing fleet. So that comes first, and then the Columbus Day parade, and then you go. So the crab season, Columbus Day being early in October, I think it's what, the first Tuesday, or I've forgotten the date of it. So whenever Columbus Day is, the fishing fleet gets a blessing from the Catholic priest, and then off they go, and then the season starts. And then some of the big deals in San Francisco, I mean, Thanksgiving in San Francisco is Dungeness crab and turkey. You know, Christmas is Dungeness crab and turkey, you know, or ham or whatever else you have. But Dungeness crab is a regular part of San Francisco Christmas. And the old San Francisco families would line up, you know, for hours before Thanksgiving and before Christmas to get Dungeness crab from the Alioto Lazio Fish Company, my friends. And so this is where I heard this whole story. In fact, we talked about it. I think I talked about it on my tour, that Julie Packard, daughter of David Packard, of Hewlett Packard, has run the Monterey Bay Aquarium for decades, I think since the 70s. So she's been doing this a long time. So, definitely, as they said, I think I remember seeing a headline on one of the articles I didn't read about her being a trust fund baby. Wouldn't be surprised. Don't think she's had a real job, I would guess, because I don't know anything else she's done except run the Monterey Bay Aquarium. Now, my question through all this is, how is it that an aquarium has power over economic policy, over major seafood industries? That's my question. How is it that Julie Packard at the Monterey Bay Aquarium has such clout with the government, our own government, both the state of California, I guess the state of Maine, and the federal government, that she can declare that we shouldn't fish for lobsters because it might be killing North Atlantic Ocean right whales, even though there's no evidence of that, and that we should, stop harvesting Dungeness crabs off the coast of California after they lowered the standard of algae blooms, which could never be met. I mean, there's an algae bloom every year in San Francisco. There's certain things about San Francisco that are regular. I spent 30 years there. I'm really familiar, okay? The herring come in January. It's great, and you can see the sea lions. If you want to go see sea lions in San Francisco at Pier 39 and other places, go in January. First of all, the weather's great. Secondly, the herring are there. And guess what the herring attract? Sea lions. Well, guess what the sea lions attract? Great white sharks. Yeah, they're in the bay too, okay? In fact, I have there was a video of this rather tragic thing that the sea lion. Send the kids away for this one. They're not going to want to hear this, okay? There was a sea lion. It's gone? Okay. So, let's get the older kids, but the younger kids now. So the sea lion, happily playing near one of the ferry boats. It was the Alcatraz ferry. And so it was playing in the surf, and it was leaping up and doing all the things the sea lions do, right? Well, and everybody's videoing because it's really cute. Well, what happened was, and here's what it's nature. This is what nature does, right? Anyway, so great white shark grabs the sea lion, drags it under, and off they go. And of course, there's like, remnants in the water and all kinds. I'm not going to get too graphic here, but what happens, what great white sharks do. And so this sort of disproved the theory that there are no sharks in the bay. Yes, there are. If there are sea lions in the bay, trust me, there are sharks in San Francisco Bay. And so that kind of proved it. It's on video. You can look it up and take a look. Like I say, it's everybody's like happily, oh, this is the water. Look at the sea lion. Bam. Anyway, but that's what they do with the Farallones every day. The Farallon Islands is a wildlife sanctuary where probably hundreds of thousands of sea lions live, mate, produce little sea lions and grab fish, And then so then the sharks are there and the orcas, the killer whales are there. Well, apparently killer whales and great white sharks don't get along really well. And it usually ends up bad for the great white shark. And there are videos of that too. But the point of all this, the reason I'm bringing this, and I'm going to get to a couple articles here in a minute. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because there's no way on earth that the head of an aquarium should be dictating economic policy to entire industries, particularly the Dungeness crab and the Maine lobster. That's insane, because you're talking generations of families that have this, in their background. That's their family business. That's what they do. And especially since both the Maine lobster, and I guess, Massachusetts, New Hampshire has a little bit of it too, but we all know it, the Maine lobster, which they fish at the George's Banks. The George's Banks is this wonderful area off New England, which I guess is fairly shallow, and that's where the lobsters live. And, of course, shallow water is better because, your lobster pots don't have to have the ropes as long. And they have special lines, and they do all kinds of things to preserve right whales. So they have sinking lines as opposed to surface lines, and they've done all this stuff to make it safer for the whales. And that's a good thing, okay? So they're doing the right thing, but they've made these efforts. But the thing is, it doesn't matter because what's really this is all about. This is really about what's happening everywhere else with the food shortages in Holland and Germany coming up and these ridiculous, the minister of nitrogen. Okay. They actually have a minister of nitrogen pollution or something like that in Holland. I can get to that story too, if we have time, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week. But the thing is that they say that, farms produce nitrogen and we can't have food because it produces nitrogen or uses nitrogen or something like that. Well, what they're forgetting, of course, is that the air is 72% nitrogen. Okay, so if you're going to get rid of nitrogen, you're going to get rid of 72% of the atmosphere. That's not conducive to a long life for any of us. Okay, we need nitrogen. Nitrogen gets in the soil. Nitrogen is what fertilizes the plants. Plants die without nitrogen. They also die without carbon dioxide, which is a whole lot less than nitrogen. It's the percentage is less than 1% carbon dioxide. It really should be like 2-4%. If we had a healthy atmosphere, we'd have like 2-4%. Carbon dioxide, but that's still not enough to trap all the heat that's escaping. See, most of the heat that bounces back to Earth comes from water vapor, clouds. That's why after a cloudy night, it's warmer than after a clear night, because on a clear night, all the heat escapes. But on a cloudy night, the heat's reflected back. There's water vapor. Water vapor is your greenhouse gas. So unless you're going to ban water and try and convince people that's a pollutant, which the wackos knew was going to be absurd, so they picked carbon dioxide because people are just dumb enough to believe that carbon dioxide, which is bad if you breathe too much of it. We breathe it out. See, the plants breathe it in. See, plants can't have too much oxygen. That's their waste product. Carbon dioxide is what keeps them going. And it makes sense because we're carbon-based life forms. Carbon is the basis of life. Okay, without carbon, there is no life. So why would you take, the basis of life out of the atmosphere? Unless you're trying to kill everybody. I mean, that's just insane, right? But that's how it goes. Anyway, so let me play a couple things, and I got a couple of articles for you here, and I'll be back in just a little bit. From addiction to achievement,
That is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elva Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Well, that sounds like fun. I want to be on that show. That sounds like a great time. Let me just make sure my microphone's on. Yep, microphone's on. We're doing well. So we got about half an hour, maybe a little bit less, until David Stockman calls in. And again, I don't mind admitting that. Let me rearrange my chair here. That when I get these major figures on, these major public figures, that it does, you know, probably make me a little nervous. I'm sure I overprep. And I think that's part of the fun of radio, is that you get to talk to some pretty incredible people. And I will always do it. I mean, I wonder how I'm going to be when Trump gets on the show. It's going to be pretty interesting. But, you always want that little twinge. I mean, most of the time I just hop on the show and just start talking. Pretty much like I am now, you know, calm and cool. But, I get the big folks on. And I really want to be respectful. But I also want to really ask them tough questions too. So I try and find that balance between respectful and still ask the questions that, ideally nobody else has even thought to ask. So I found something in Fox Business, and this is what kind of got me on this thing. September 30th, so just a couple months ago, Maine lobstermen, their livelihoods threatened, push back against California Aquarium's red listing. In the subheading, Monterey Bay Aquarium wants consumers to pass on Maine lobster. Here's why and what's at stake for the industry. So I'm telling you all now, go out and have a lobster. Okay, go get, fly one in. If you're in Florida, fly it in. You know, all you seafood places along the Gulf Coast, you know, get some Maine lobster and offer that along with your Gulf shrimp and your San Francisco Dungeness crab and Florida stone crab and Maryland softshell crab and Alaskan king crab, you know, and all the great fishies that are just wonderfully nutritious. Hey, whatever happened to swordfish? Did it get too much mercury or something? Because I don't see swordfish anymore. I used to love swordfish. I get swordfish steaks. Yeah, it was great. Very thick, very chewy. It was a wonderful fish. Even though swordfish are beautiful, so I don't mind. It's weird. If an animal's really too pretty, you don't want to eat it. But if you don't know what it is, it's like, oh, it's okay, fine. So we don't seem to have a problem with beef.
you know, but deer are like pretty, you know, Bambi. So people are reluctant to hunt, you know, adult deer because of Bambi, but have no problem eating a hamburger. It's kind of an interesting way things go. But lobster's the other thing, too. And, of course, the problem with all seafood is tossing a live animal into a boiling pot of water. And so that has always gotten me, too. So people are really happy to have somebody else do it. But there's a way that I learned from New England, and I think it works with the crabs, too. You turn them on their back upside down, and they kind of go into like a hypnotist state or hypnosis. It kind of stuns them a bit because they don't like being on their back. And that's the most humane way to do it. There is no humane way to do it. But on the other hand, if you don't cook them, you can't eat them. And so this is always this trade-off. You know, if you don't kill Bambi, or well, not Bambi, you know, Bambi's dad. If you don't kill an adult deer, you're never going to try deer. And so how do you have respect for the animal? Enjoy, you know, the nutritious benefits and the wonderful taste of these great critters. And still keep your soul, your humanity, your spirit. Knowing the fact that God created an earth where pretty much everything eats everything else. I mean, that's the way things go. And it's very, anyway, these are the questions that I ponder before I toss a lobster into a pot of boiling water, which I've only done a few times. And like I said, I don't like doing that, but I have, because it's hypocritical of me to go let somebody else do it and not have done it myself. All right. So Fox Business, Christine Roussel, Roussell, Fox Business. September, I'll get my date once again here. I had it a second ago. Where'd it go? Here we go. September 20th of 2022 says, lobstermen from Maine are speaking out over recent warnings about the product they catch to make their living after a West Coast aquarium. Yeah, from one coast to another, right? That's pretty good reach. You go from Monterey to Maine and order people not to eat Maine lobster from your little aquarium, all right? You know, with your fish tanks. All right. So after West Coast Aquarium discouraged consumers from purchasing lobsters, more than just discouraging, they tried to ban them, right? The article says the Monterey Bay Aquarium in Monterey, California, is standing by its decision to, quote, red list the lobster industry. And this is why I'm saying no aquarium should be able to tell you what you can or cannot eat. It's just none of their business. You know, now, especially now, if they said that if these were being overfished or overharvested, I can understand that. Say, look, listen, we need new limits here. You're overfishing, you're overharvesting. Don't do that. Or if they were killing all kinds of whales, you know, like when the tuna nets were catching way too many, you know, dolphins. I mean, once in a while, yeah, but I mean, they were catching they're killing thousands of dolphins a year for your tuna, right? Well, that was wrong. You're not fishing for dolphin, you're fishing for tuna. And of course, you don't want to overfish the tuna either, you know. So but all these things have to be considered. But the thing is, the lobster industry, like the Dungeness crab industry, is probably one of the most regulated, probably one of the best, most environmentally, as the left would say, sustainable industries out there. So who the hell is this aquarium, you know, Julie Packard, to say, no, I'm sorry, you cannot have, because I don't want to eat lobster, nobody else can either. It's like gun control for fish, okay, or gun control for seafood or for lobsters. This is like, I didn't think of that. This is the gun control argument. I don't want it, so you can't have it. Well, great. What a leftist. Anyway, Monterey Bay Aquarium in California is standing by its decision to red list the lobster industry over concerns that North Atlantic right whales are harmed in the fishing process. Okay, now the reason the right whales got their name is because when they were harpooned, they didn't sink, so they were the right whale to hunt. And that's R-I-G-H-T. It's a rather unfortunate name, but that's, you know, that's what they called it. So the New England whaling industry, which fortunately died out. Oh, by the way, you know what saved the whales? Okay, here's one for you. What saved the whales was petroleum, was oil. Okay? That's what caused the whaling industry to die out. So all you people that are against petroleum, understand that the source of oil used to be whales, whale blubber, you know, melted down. That's how people lit their lamps. Okay? That's how that was the grease they used in their wagon wheels. Okay? So whales were killed for grease and oil. All right? So all you folks that are against petroleum, just think that if you didn't have petroleum in the ground, the whales would be gone. Think about that next time, you environmentalist wackos. And I'm an environmentalist. I'm just not a wacko. Anyway, back to the article. She says, we stand by our science-based assessments. That's Seafood Watch. Oh, that's not Julie Packard. Okay. So Seafood Watch, a sustainable seafood advisory, a list released by the aquarium, told Fox Business via email. So they didn't actually talk to him, right? So here's the email. It says, we stand by our science-based assessments. Well, anybody that has to say that they're science-based, you know they're not science-based. They're politically based. They're ideologically based. Because the science, you know, there's plenty of crab and there's plenty of lobster. That's the science. You know, the fact is right whales aren't dying in lobster pots or by lobster lines or anything else lobster. They're not. Because I got articles to talk about that. Okay. So it's not science-based. It's leftist environmental wacko-based.
which means it's, you know, it's anything but science. And then it says here specifically they charge that North Atlantic right whales, which number less than 340, and that is a problem. I mean, they are almost extinct, so we need to preserve the right whales. But this isn't the way to do it. That's which goes back to my gun control argument. If you take all the depositors in a bank and get rid of them, then that will stop bank robberies. Well, that's absurd because they're not connected. In other words, the fact that right whales are becoming, you know, there's only 340 right whales, that's a crisis. That's not a lot. That's a very small gene pool. You know, right whales, how often do they have a calf? Every year or two? Maybe. Okay. That's a crisis. But the lobsters aren't to blame for that. Neither are the lobster or fishing folks. See, it's a disconnect. It's the same disconnect as gun control. Well, if we take guns from the law-abiding, you know, criminals will stop murdering people. No, they won't. They'll murder people because the fact that criminals murder people has nothing to do with the rights of the law-abiding. They're two totally separate and distinct entities. Anyway, back to the article. The Seafood Watch's red list advises, right, because they don't have regulatory power, but they seem to by virtue of this, right? Red list advises consumers to take a pass on these species for now. They're overfished, lack strong management, or are caught or farmed in ways that harm other marine life or the environment. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You better take a vaccine so that everybody else is protected. So should I wear a seatbelt walking down the street to protect people in their cars? I actually saw that in a meme once. I stole that one. That's not an original Gregism. Article says other lobsters included in the warning include the green best, you know, include a green best choice, a yellow good alternative, and a blue certified. Oh, there we go. Other lobsters included in the warning include a green best choice. Okay, so this is the green movement, right? So they give you a green light. This is why I'm sure the green movement got going, even though trees are green. So you get a best choice, a good alternative, and one that's certified. So I can only eat the food that they've certified? Oh, please give me a break. Anyway, the aquarium told Fox Business via email, again, they don't talk to them, that Seafood Watch, I'm going to find out who they are, started the assessments you're inquiring about in 2018 after 17 North Atlantic right whales were reported dead in the United States, all right? Fox is always popping their articles around, so I have to go back to where I was. Yeah, they do that. They'll flash ads in front of you after like a minute just to make sure you're looking at the ads. They don't care about the article. Here we go. Let's see if I can find one here. As a result of the red listing of the lobster industry, HelloFresh and Blue Apron, two meal kit companies, have now removed lobster from their consumer meal kits, and that's from the Associated Press. Of course, nowhere in this article has anybody asked Julie Packard and the Monterey Bay Aquarium to prove their assessment, to show evidence that there are many dead right whales, that the lobster is being overfished. There's absolutely no evidence in this article whatsoever. So again, whenever you analyze news, you got to see what's there and you got to see what's not there. And what's not there is any kind of proof of this. So now we have a quote from a fishing person. Tony Bray, 49, of Deer Isle, Maine, began lobstering around age 12. Well, I guess it's against child labor laws. It's a family business. It's okay. Anyway, he did not mince words when asked if he has ever had a whale entangled in his gear. Hell no, he told Fox Business. It doesn't happen. There you go. Bray speculated that the move to redlist his industry was to reduce the number of fishermen who are on the coast of Maine, perhaps to make way for the construction of windmills. Ooh. There we go. There's your smoking lobster. Bray speculated that the move to redlist his industry was to reduce the number of fishermen who are on the coast of Maine. It's still mostly guys, so I can say fishermen, all right? I'm sure there are fisherwomen too, but still mostly guys, right? The number of fishermen who are on the coast of Maine, perhaps to make way for the construction of windmills, which aren't needed because, you know, we've got all kinds of other power. He says they want fishermen out of the way. The Gulf of Maine is not the problem. Here's another lobsterman. Kristen Porter told Fox Business, would you think in 20 years or more there couldn't be one whale death they could identify as caused by U.S. gear? What are the odds of that? Okay. We have another quote here. Porter, who fishes out of Cutler, Maine, previously served as president of the Maine Lobstermen's Association. They have one. He said he's been a lobsterman for over 30 years. I think they're targeting all industry, all fishing industry. Of course, I said that too. The only fisheries that they have on their green list are agriculture, in other words, farms. So you're not allowed to have fresh seafood from the ocean. You can only have farm-regulated, government-regulated, government-industrially fed, genetically modified, you know, sitting in huge pools of poop, you know, fish food. No, I don't think so. The whole reason that I like, you know, Pacific caught salmon and wild tuna and all the wild fish out there. I used to like swordfish. It's because they eat ocean stuff, you know, krill, you know, plankton, little fish that are eaten by bigger fish, which are eaten by bigger fish. And they'll end up in the great white shark anyway. No, I'm just kidding. But the point is that naturally fed fish are incredibly good and incredibly nutritious. Why do you think that the grizzly bears grow so big, especially at Kodiak Island in Alaska? Why do you think the brown bears and the grizzly bears are the biggest bears in the world? Because they eat salmon. They eat a lot of salmon. They get big. Yeah, they eat blueberries in the spring, but they eat salmon in the fall, you know, or whenever the salmon run is. Anyway, aquaculture. So this is what it is about, too. So we've got windmills, and we've got aquaculture. Okay, Porter explained, refers to the process of growing fish or seafood in pens or tanks rather than catching it wild in the ocean. The quote is, we always say that wild-caught is the best fish. It is. In fact, if you check on your labels, okay, one thing to check on salmon labels is whether it went through Thailand. And if you see, you know, international sustainable labels that look like the fish was transported, they process a lot of it in Thailand. Of course, to get there, it has to sit in a tank, in a container ship, and then it has to come back in a container ship. It's pretty stupid, all right? So if you get Pacific caught salmon processed in Alaska, brought directly to the United States, it's going to be a lot fresher. I mean, that's what you want. And so that's the place you want to go with this. All right. So, all right. Maine's congressional. Here we go. Let's see. So that's it. Wild caught is better. I mean, it just is. Okay. In fact, you get up to is it Portland, Maine? They have the statue of the Maine fisherman out there with his big raincoat. I forgot there's a name for it. I forgot what it's called. In a big storm. It's a famous statue. Anyway, the article says Maine's congressional delegation had harsh words for the Monterey Bay Aquarium in a September 8th, 2022 letter to Jennifer DeAnto Kimmerly, the aquarium's vice president of Global Ocean Initiatives. Why would a Monterey Bay Aquarium, a local Monterey Bay aquarium, have a vice president of Global Ocean Initiatives if they aren't an environmental front? So then the question is, where do they get their money? Is there secret funding from the Obama administration and the Brandon insurrection to funnel millions of dollars to Monterey for their, quote, Global Ocean Initiatives? Remember the Law of the Sea conference? Some kind of interesting. Reagan refused to do that. I'm going to ask David Stockman about that. He's going to be on in a little bit. They say Maine's congressional delegation, it says your accusation that Maine lobstermen are to blame for the troubles of North Atlantic right whales is flat out wrong. And that was in a letter published on Senator Angus King's website. Senator King is interesting because he's independent. Letter continued. Pianki's on the line. I'll get to him in just a second. The letter continued. Right whales are not dying in Maine lobster gear, and the report blindly ignores everything that Maine lobstermen have done to create a sustainable industry. This is Senator King, right? Imagine Senator King has to stop an aquarium from ending his fishing industry in his state. This is staggering. King's letter was co-signed by Senator Susan Collins of Maine, a gelding Republican. We've got Representative Chelly Pingree, D. Maine, Representative Jared Golden, D. Maine, and Democrat and Governor Janet Mills. So a lot of Democrats who signed on to this. They want their, you know, Democrats eat lobster too. Okay, and Democrats want the economy to work as well. This is King requested that the aquarium, quote, immediately reverse the irresponsible designation, adding that the publicly available facts rebut this aggressive action. Right whale deaths or serious injury have never been attributed to Maine lobster gear. And that's what's from Senator King. He says the last known entanglement with Maine lobster gear occurred in 2004 and the whale survived. Okay, there's more of this. I want to get to Bianchi. But this is just this whole idea that basically a blacklist from an aquarium is shutting down not only the Maine lobster industry, but they shut down the Dungeness crab season by forcing the California Fish and Game folks to redo their standards of an algae bloom, that those standards were so strict that they could never be met because they always have more than that in their algae blooms in the spring, or actually the fall. Pianki, good morning.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Okay, a little nervous. I got my David Stockman interview, and unfortunately, I was told that I can't take callers and I can't have a panel discussion, so we're not going to do that. So if you have a question for me, you know, tell me now. I'll check our live chat too, see if anybody has something. So it's just me, and so I get to, but I got plenty of questions, so that should be okay. So have you heard about this? Do you know anything about the Monterey Aquarium? I know because I lived in San Francisco, but have you heard about these folks, Julie Packard and the Wackos?
Well, all these sorts of things is leading to separate countries.
Mm.
if you want that in California, leave it in California. Leave it in that country. I don't want it in my country. And people that want to come eat lobster, they can come to your own vacation or whatever.
But it's like the CDC, the impact is that, the Monterey Bay Aquarium has no legal power. They have no government power. They have no regulatory power. They have no power of any kind. They just put Maine lobsters on their own little blacklist saying, don't eat Maine lobster. And unfortunately, the woke idiots in various corporations are not selling it. Restaurants are not serving it. And so they're effectively killing an industry just by putting Maine lobster on their list. See, that they still have the power. That's the problem. Nobody has to obey what they say. They're just an aquarium. And yet they are.
Well,
and that's the part I don't understand.
People are, isn't it? The people just do things. Like you got the Walmart CEO has made a statement that prices are going up and stores are going to be closed because of these thefts, organized thefts. People just walk in, gather up stuff, and walk out, especially in these urban areas. Of course, you know, big Walmarts are not no longer built in the urban areas. They are in outlying areas, too. But you still have these crime elements that are neglected. Joe Biden taking credit for Brittany Griner being released from Russia.
I just read a little bit about it, but it was too soon before the show to announce it. So she's been released, or where is she now?
Well, he's been in release.
Who has? Oh, he's been released. So who is what?
Yeah.
Oh, is she masquerading and trying to pretend she's a transgender person?
But she's the male in a relationship.
Oh, well, that's interesting. See, I don't know anything about him. Fill me in. We got a few minutes. So who is Brittany Griner?
Oh, yeah.
Is it like Michael Thomas?
Like Lori Lightfoot. Lori Lightfoot. She's the male in a relationship, wants to be the man, so hell, call them what they want to be.
Oh, so Brittany is a guy. What was Brittany's original name before he changed it to her name?
I don't know. I think that is her original. That is when she was born. That is her original name. But she now in the relationship, she's the male and the other lady is the female.
Interesting. You know, I talked about that. We had Dorothy Diana, who does our Sex and Sensuality report, and I asked her about that. You know, we were talking about gay relationships, lesbian relationships. Even in those relationships, there still is a male and a female component to them of a same-sex relationship, which I find fascinating. What's the point of a same-sex relationship, which I thought would be two men or two women, if you're going to have
one of the females walk around dressed like a male, have a strap on under their clothes, and extend down their leg, and all that kind of crazy stuff?
It is crazy stuff. Yeah, I mean, this is, so
well,
I don't get it.
But
of course I don't get it. I'm a straight guy. you know, yeah.
Yeah, it's confusing, isn't it?
Well, it is
if
because
you don't get it, what do you think it does to kids?
Well, exactly. Well, this is why you have to be careful with the kids. You present, you know, age-appropriate information to them. So I think it's a good idea what Dorothy does as a sex education person. What I don't like is, you know, the drag queen and the whole bit and all the other stuff. We've talked about that before. But let me bring it back here. We only have about 6 or 7 minutes here. But the thing that galls me about this aquarium is that just as I don't want drag queens having control over what kids learn in school, I don't want some aquarium to tell us what we can and can't eat and destroy entire industries just because they want to have all our food come from a pond or a tank. That's what the problem is.
Yeah. You know, if the United States went to war against somebody,
mm-hmm.
Another country that was anti all the things that this nation is starting to develop, you know, saying this, saying that, gender confusion and so on, I don't think they could ever win because that nation will fight extra hard knowing that if they lose, what's coming?
That's an interesting thought.
See,
think
you couldn't give away Hershey bars.
Yeah.
And win friendships.
Yeah, actually, World War II, the guys had coffee, had chewing gum, had nylon stockings they used to carry and all kinds of – they were bribes, basically, for the local
mm-hmm.
folks. Yeah, it was really interesting.
I think, well, let's talk about the United States for a minute, because this is interesting. So the last time we had a real war, a real shooting war with a country that could actually defeat us in a war, if worse came to worse, was Germany and Japan. So World War II. North Korea was not going to defeat the United States in the Korean War. North Vietnam was not going to defeat the United States. Neither was Iraq or Afghanistan, or pretty much any other place we've been to, or Bosnia. Where else did we go? I'm losing track now of all these military adventurisms that were not they were undeclared wars. But since World War II, we really haven't had a nation that we have had a war again. And thank God we haven't. But we really haven't had a war like World War II since World War II. And so the question is, who would now attack us? And if they did, they would have to – the usual purpose of war is to conquer another country. This goes back into ancient history. So who's going to conquer the United States? And it's not the military that they're worried about. It's all of us gun owners out here. There's enough gun owners to defend this country without a military. I mean, who's going to occupy the United States? So they don't bring in an army. They bring in a bunch of illegal aliens and have them mix in secretly. See, it's all done clandestinely. That's the invading army. You know, and then they hide them with support and ITIN numbers and things like that. So that's our invasion. So the left that wants the United States destroyed, they don't inspire another country to do it, which is the classic way of doing it. They bring in, you know, millions of illegals. You know, don't give them the COVID jab, so their health is fine. You know, give them all kinds of welfare benefits. Don't encourage them to get abortions. But Americans get COVID jabs and abortions and everything else. You know, so they want to reduce the American population of independent-minded people that actually know what this country stands for and replace us with an entire population of peasant serfs who are dependent on government who have no knowledge of freedom. That's how I see it.
Well, that's a good observation.
Well, thank you. I have my moments. Josie's on the line. I'll bring her in, too. And you can both stick around, like I say, stick around until I get my David Stockman call. And so that's going to be fun. It's going to be a really good time. I don't know if he has 15 minutes. I don't know if he has half an hour. You know, like Peter Navarro, I just keep asking questions until they have to go because, you know, I don't get these opportunities every day. Josie, what do you think? Lobster or no lobster? Does the Monterey Bay Aquarium have the ability to tell us what we can have on our dinner plate? Obviously a rhetorical question.
I love lobster, so they can go, you know, where these people.
Hey, do we have any restaurants here that serve lobster from Maine? Josie and I are both in the Milton, Pensacola area.
I think you can have the choice at Red Lobster or either lobster normally.
Well, that's
but
a national
I haven't been
company.
There in a while. So.
Yeah, Red Lobster I think has Alaskan crab. I think they have, I think they probably have Maine lobster. I don't think, do they have Dungeness crab?
I don't know.
Huh.
But I love lobster, so I don't see these people. They just want to control us with everything, and I'm sick and tired of it.
Well,
I'm
sick and tired of people going along with it. See, this is so easily resisted.
Yeah, I know.
You know, they don't have to do it.
Yeah, I know.
Huh.
No. But I was calling you because Rod Stewart, I sent you a text, actually. Rod Stewart, an 11-year-old boy, collapsed with a heart attack while he was playing
the game. Rod Stewart has an 11-year-old boy? What is he, in his 70s? How does he have an 11-year-old?
About five different women with so many kids.
Uh-huh.
He wants to be like King David, 300 wives.
Good luck with that. Well, didn't Charlie Chaplin? Charlie Chaplin had kids well into, I think he was 80 when he had his last kid.
Really?
Yeah,
but
I saw that on,
guy,
sleep, on When Harry Met Sally.
This guy,
go ahead.
This guy, he was saying if you're not vaccinated, you're a killer. And he hated for people that didn't want to get the vaccine. And I sent you a couple little clips there,
Okay.
I took a picture of a couple things before they deleted him on Twitter, you know, like they did with Irene Cara. I cannot find the first one when she was bragging about her birthday vaccine.
That's a surprise.
This guy, he's with a vaccine, like, oh my gosh. And now he's young boy, collapsed, heart attack. He's still alive, but that's pretty sad. So I put, I wonder what you think about now. Because an 11-year-old with a heart attack,
it is ridiculous.
But anyway.
But it happens.
Yeah.
You know, and it's crazy, but it happens. You know, we just had, did you hear any of the hearing yesterday, Senator Johnson's hearing?
Yes, I did, actually.
Okay. What'd you think?
And good. But you know, let me finish.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I had a nurse. I had a nurse last night. She works at CVS, and she was telling me, she says, this is insane. I said, what? She said, you should see all these older folks. They're up to the fifth and sixth boosters, and they want more. I'm like, what?
Wow.
And she's given a lot of the vaccine injection, this girl, and she's pregnant. And I told her, look, you just remember one thing, sweetie. Every time you're shoving that, it's that person's probably going to die. So the death is going to be in your hands. So I made her feel guilty last night. I said, is there any way you can just shoot in the air the liquid and then shove the needle, and they're not going to do the difference. So anyway, so we'll see if she's going to do it or not, but she's going to get back to me. But she's pregnant, and I told her, do not breastfeed your baby. She's got only one shot, this girl. But it just breaks my heart. These older folks, they're insane. They're just, they're blinded by the devil. That's sad, you know?
Yeah.
They don't see the light.
I have my guest. And I've got Diane on the line. Hold on. We've got David Stockman on the line. So let me just pull some up here.
Okay.
Do a couple of good changes. Yeah. And so this is a rare treat. I love when things like this happen because I get to do just these incredible interviews with amazing people. So let's welcome our guest of the day, Mr. David Stockman. So I found a little bio on him for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. David Stockman is the founding partner of Heartland Industrial Partners. He was formerly a senior managing director of the Blackstone Group. Stockman was a managing director at Salomon Brothers. He served as the director of the Office of Management and Budget in the Reagan administration and was the youngest cabinet member of the 20th century. Wow, I'm impressed. Good morning, sir. Welcome to Action Radio.
Good morning. Happy to be with you.
Thank you very much. I've got some things to tell you in a little bit because we are probably the most unique radio show in the world because we actually have a citizen legislature. I want to get to that in a little bit. But let's get to your book. You've got a list of – oh, yeah, I think you're going to enjoy this. But you've got a fairly long list of books. Did you start writing as soon as you left the Reagan administration? Books and articles?
Yeah, I did. I wrote a book when I left in 1986, kind of cataloging what happened and why we failed to shrink the size of government as we originally intended. I spent most of my career in finance on Wall Street, and then in recent times I started writing books, and I have a daily newsletter or blog that I have subscribers to. So
yeah, I found it
right in the middle of what's happening in the world.
Yeah. I found it was getting a little frustrating because all your articles are a subscription, but I'll get that at some point to get going here.
Okay.
So thank you. So if you could, what did you find the reasons that during the Reagan administration you couldn't shrink government? What were some of the biggest things in your way?
Well, it was basically that Republicans like to talk about cutting the budget, of shrinking the size of the federal monster, as we called it back then.
Uh-huh.
When push came to shove, they always found a reason why the ag subsidies needed to continue, or why, even though they were arguing education should be a state and local matter, that they really couldn't roll back federal spending for those purposes, or that the entitlements were too politically sensitive to touch. So, there were a lot of reasons. We did make a few budget cuts in the first year, 1981, but, slowly that spending came back into the budget. And by the end of the decade, after Ronald Reagan left, there really wasn't much of a trace of, the number one objective he had, which was shrinking the size of the federal government. So, I think when he started, the spending, federal spending, was about 23% of GDP. When he ended, it was a little over 22%. So that's, it didn't get worse, and that's a tiny little bit of progress. But it wasn't any sweeping change in the direction of things. It was more like a pause. Which, when we look at what we're up against today, that needs to be given some credit. But it really ended up being a pause, not a revolution. You know, we called it the Reagan Revolution, but it was more the Reagan pause.
Well, let me give you the revolution then, because I want to get into your book. We're going to talk mostly about that, but I just want to give you one bill. And I have other bills if we have time and if you're interested. But I wrote a constitutional amendment
to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. It's very short. It's one sentence, but this is earth-shattering. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution shall be amended by striking Clause 2 to borrow money on the credit of the United States. Section 8, Clause 1 shall be amended by adding at the end, and Congress shall have no power to borrow money on the credit of the United States, nor to print money to cover expenses greater than revenues.
Hmm.
That's my amendment.
Okay.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, you know, that would be a heck of a change from where we are today, and a welcome one, because
okay.
they've lost all sense of fiscal rectitude. I mean, but I think the issue becomes, what is the cause of a $31 trillion public debt, which,
mm-hmm.
by the way, wasn't even $1 trillion when we took office in January 1981. Now, that's 40 years ago, of course, but still, when you go from 1 to 31 at a time when the GDP, you know, so that's 31 times at a during a period when the GDP went from, you know, $3 trillion to $20 trillion, you still have an enormous breakout of borrowing. So you're exactly right. But why did this happen? And I think the number
well, that's
one
my next question.
Reason... okay. The number one reason is the Federal Reserve made it easy for politicians to spend and borrow and inflate the public debt, because the Fed basically bought the debt, monetized the debt, and kept interest rates at rock bottom when the law of supply and demand would say that if you had a $3 trillion deficit like we had 2 years ago, $3 trillion in 1 year, you
right.
would be driving interest rates sky high, because the bond market would find itself flooded with demand from the U.S. Treasury. Everybody else would have been kind of elbowed out of the market, so to speak. Interest rates would have soared. And it would have been a signal to the politicians into Washington that you can't do this. But the Fed instead stepped in, and as we know, there the balance sheet of the Fed went from $4 trillion on the eve of the so-called COVID lockdowns and those big spending bills. It went from $4 trillion to $9 trillion during that period. So essentially, it was buying up the debt along with other central banks around the world, and thereby accommodating this, you know, massive outbreak of fiscal irresponsibility. Now, the problem with that is it's not sustainable. And now we've got the highest inflation in 40 years because the central banks of the world printed way, way too much money. And so you go from the frying pan into the fire. That's where we are today. And it's not going to be easy to bring this inflation, which is still running 7% by the CPI, and a lot more than that if you you know, look at it honestly, to bring that back towards 2%, to say nothing of zero where it should be, is going to take some really there'll be a lot of broken furniture in the financial markets and in the economy overall.
Fascinating. Let me ask you something I've been meaning to find out about for a long time, and that's the opposite of inflation, which is deflation. Nobody talks
yep.
about this, or if they do, it's evil. They say, and I heard some ridiculous theory that you can't have deflation because people, when they see the prices go down, won't buy things because they'll want the prices to go down even more. That to me is irrational. People, if they see prices go down, supply and demand, just basics, they're going to buy more stuff. So why don't we talk about deflation, and why don't we have 2% negative as opposed to 2% positive inflation? What would happen if we had 2% negative deflation?
Great. That's a great question. And as a matter of fact, it's this whole deflation boogeyman that became the justification for the Fed after the year 2000, especially when Bernanke became chairman, for the tremendous money printing, you know, spree that they went into. They kept arguing we got too little inflation. Now, I started in 1970, and I participated in the great Capitol Hill and the great debates of the 70s when we had double-digit inflation, and then in the Reagan era and beyond. And the very idea that central bankers were complaining about too little inflation or lowflation or we're not making our target would have been ridiculous back in that in those times. So this became, in a sense, an ideology of the central bank to justify pumping endless amount of credit into the financial system on the theory it was going to make the economy perform better. Well, you know, we're reaping the whirlwind today. But the key point that you've raised is that deflation in a general sense is not necessarily bad. In fact, it means that savers' savings will go a little farther if they're in retirement. It means the paycheck will stretch a little further. There is absolutely nothing wrong with deflation. And as a matter of fact, beginning in the 1990s, we should have had deflation if we didn't want our economy offshored to China, because China came roaring into the global trading system. It had ultra-low costs and wages, brand new factories built with debt. And if we wanted to be competitive with that, we didn't need 2% per year inflation. We needed negative 2% per year or more deflation to bring our cost structure back in line with where it had been prior to the great inflationary breakout of the 1970s. So, this whole issue of a 2% inflation target and that inflation is good for you, because remember, when you have a 2% target, every 35 years, the purchasing power of money is cut in half. So in a working lifetime, you know, whatever you saved in your early years is worth half what you put in the bank. And if you raise it to 3%, which is what they're talking about now, because inflation is so much above the target, every 25 years, the purchasing power of your money would be cut in half. So, we have a tremendous problem of policy at the central bank. This anti-deflation, that's the justification they constantly use, that if we don't pump more credit into the economy, we're in danger of slipping towards 0% inflation or below, and that's a terrible thing. That's what they tell you, and actually, in truth, there's nothing wrong with deflation. In fact, there have been long periods, and I point this out in the book, there have been long periods in which we had no inflation at all or even slight deflation, and the economy performed well. For instance, from 1921 to the end of World War II, 1946, so, that's 25-year period, the CPI on net went up by 0.0%. No inflation beginning to end for 25 years. The size of the economy tripled during that period of time.
Yeah, roaring 20s.
The roaring 20s, and even though we had the Great Depression of the 30s, even when you average that in and then the recovery during World War II, the point is the economy still tripled in size in real terms, even though we had zero inflation for a quarter of a century. And yet you listen to these central bankers today and they say inflation is the essential ingredient economic growth and prosperity, and
the vaccines are safe and effective too. Yeah, right.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just saw yesterday. I was looking at, someone had posted a nice little video from one of the so-called big thinkers on the Fed, Lael Brainard, who's kind of probably next in line one of these days, unfortunately, to lead the joint. And this is January 2020. That's not that long ago, right?
Right.
And she says, we're struggling to get inflation up. January 2020, one of the leading spokesmen and policy wonks on the Fed was saying we're struggling to get inflation up. And look where we are today. The American public is being literally decimated at the grocery store, at the fuel pump, et cetera, because of what these clowns on the Fed have done.
Well, someone's making money off this. In fact, I read the description on Amazon for your book, so let me get the book title for everybody, The Great Money Bubble, Protect Yourself from the Coming Inflation. And you said, it says here, Americans are facing sticker shock at every turn, from the gas pump to the grocery store and every kind of consumer service. but the eye-popping price increases are just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the threat to the country's economic recovery. And this is the line that got me. Inflation showers windfalls on the rich while penalizing workers, savers, retirees, small businesses, and most of Main Street economic life. So who's benefiting? Somebody, if the target is 2%, that's, I've always understood that to be a transfer of wealth from our money to, I guess, the Fed, the bankers, the government. And I'm curious how that works. But somebody's making money off inflation.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. Can you explain how that works?
Well, basically, yes, because they pumped all this money into the financial system. The theory was that this is going to make Main Street perform better. There are more jobs, more growth, more increase in living standards. But it's totally wrong. It never – all of this credit. And remember, the Fed's balance sheet was only $200 billion when Greenspan really kicked this off in 1987 when he became Fed chairman. Today, it's $9 trillion, slightly under. All right, that's a 45-fold increase in the balance sheet of the Fed, which just measures how much credit it's created over time. 45-fold increase at a time when the GDP only went from $5 trillion to $25. So the GDP, in nominal terms, with all the inflation built in, is five times bigger. The Fed's balance sheet and credit creation is 45 times bigger than it was in 1987. So when you're pumping money into the system nine times faster than the economy is growing, you're going to inflate everything in sight, and that's what happened. The financial markets, stocks, bonds, you know, derivatives, inflated enormously. So therefore, the people that owned the assets had a huge windfall. Whereas anyone in the wage market competing with China found that their wages didn't even keep up with inflation. And anyone who was already retired and had saved for a working lifetime, going back to probably the 30s and 40s and 50s, found their money purchased half of what it was worth when they put it in the bank. So, in short, wage earners ended up with the short end of the stick. Savers ended up with the short end of the stick. People just trying to get by living more or less hand-to-mouth on Main Street didn't benefit at all. And therefore, the top 1% and the top 10% that own 50% and 80% respectively of the stock ended up with a huge windfall gain. During that same period, the value of financial assets held by households went from $10 trillion to $120 trillion, but the overwhelming share of that went to the top 1% and 10%. So the Fed is, the best friend of the rich man who already has his assets and is a mortal enemy of the worker and the saver and the young people starting out who are trying to build their own financial security.
Well, let's change that. You know, Action Radio is all about action. And I'll give you my email here if you want to follow up further and work with this. I'm at greg@writeyourlaws.com. That's our website,
okay.
writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. This is greg@writeyourlaws.com, because I'd love to send you our constitutional amendment, and let's work on deflation. Let's make it a good word. You know, maybe
okay.
If you'd like to write a bill, would you like to write a bill yourself and put it on our writeyourlaws.com website?
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Let me think about that, but I think there's a lot in my book that is supportive
of
the cause.
Let's
you'll see, and there's several chapters where I go back and just lay out the basic history that shows the idea that we need more and more inflation in order to get economic growth and more jobs is just nonsense, and that what you need is sound money, not 2% inflation, and certainly not the 8% inflation that we're suffering from today.
Well, let's go through your book in whatever time we have available. Again, the title is The Great Money Bubble, Protect Yourself from the Coming Inflation. Can you explain what a money bubble is?
Yeah, I just used the term to say inflation is more than just $5 at the gas pump or you know, a cup of coffee going to $3 or $4 or $5.
Uh-huh.
It is the value of everything that courses through the economy. So we have had first inflation of financial assets, unbelievable inflation since the late 80s. We've had an enormous inflation of debt in the economy, and I don't, you know, I think that is totally misunderstood by people. But if we look at, and I'm not talking just about public debt, the federal debt, which everybody kind of focuses on, but the total debt of households and of businesses, financial institutions, and government combined, that debt was about $9 trillion, or double the GDP in 1987. It is now $91 trillion today.
Wow.
And nearly four times the GDP. Now, why is this important, these ratios, going uh-huh. from two times GDP to nearly four times? The answer is that's the leverage ratio of the economy. And the higher the leverage that the economy takes on, the more difficult it is for the economy to grow, for entrepreneurs to, create the magic that makes for high prosperity, because everybody is struggling with too much debt. And Congress is going to find this out very shortly. Even though the Fed did monetize everything, the mm-hmm. fact is inflation is out of control, and interest rates have now risen quite dramatically in relative terms. They're not very high relative inflation, in fact. But the debt service of the federal government is going to go from about $300 billion a year, which was a huge number anyway, say last year, to more than a trillion in a very short period of time, because when you have a 2 or 3% increase in average interest rates on a $31 trillion public debt, it's very quickly adds up in terms of what the debt service is. Now, the reason I'm focusing on that is that it's not just Washington. It's not just the federal government. Everybody, households have $18 trillion of debt, and interest rates are going up. And so, therefore, they're going to find that the debt service burden has increased quite substantially. Businesses have borrowed for bad purposes, really, because the interest rates were so low. They, borrowed trillions to buy back their own stock or to do M&A deals that really didn't make a lot of sense but were easy to finance because you could borrow money so cheaply. Well, you have all this debt now in the business sector, and it didn't add to the capacity. It didn't add to productivity. It was just financial engineering that eventually moved wealth and assets to the top of the economic ladder. So my point is the $91 trillion of public mm-hmm. and private debt that we have today is a huge roadblock to growth, to rising living standards and prosperity, the very thing that all the politicians in Washington tell you they're trying to create.
You know, it's interesting. We just had a midterm election. Where are the Wall Street investment writers and people and advocates saying, why are you doing this? Why wasn't this made a bigger issue in the midterms? Is it going to be an issue in 2024? It certainly wasn't that much in 2020. The national debt is huge. And now I'm hearing from you, $91 trillion of total debt. You know, I mean, yeah. How much can our economy sustain before, we go off that deep end? I don't think anybody knows yet. I asked that question to Dr. Walter Williams several years ago. How much debt can our economy sustain? I was just talking about the national debt, the government debt, but now you've basically tripled it here. How much can we sustain?
Yeah.
And why isn't this really being talked about and made a political issue by the folks that know the most about it? You, the Wall Street investors, the different folks that see the difference between the Fed, buying the debt and monetizing it, and all the consumer
yeah.
economy, us regular folks out here.
Well, the problem is Wall Street has been corrupted in the sense that they have learned to live with an inflationary Fed, because it has meant that interest rates are ultra low, so therefore you can borrow money in order to speculate that stock prices keep going up whether the economy is growing or not, and so that's a great thing. So essentially, you know, the financial system has been co-opted by this inflationary monetary policy. And, of course, the politicians in Washington that I knew and was part of in the 1970s, Republican politicians were afraid to death of huge persistent deficits because they knew that it would lead to bad economic consequences. Well, that's all gone, and the politicians in Washington, if you know, take this posture that, well, in the long run, you know, the debt's too big, we have to do something about it. But right now, we seem to be coasting by with no problems. So everybody has gotten the wrong message. They, you know, they've gotten the wrong signal. And it's leading to a confluence of factors to a buildup of debt in all sectors of the economy that's going to, you know, create a day of reckoning. And I don't think it's that far away.
See, that's the scariest thing I've heard all day. I call it just, we do a bunch of new terms here, like the GOP, I call them the gelding old party. For the simple reason that they you can use that, feel free. I found a quote in an article that you wrote in Doug Casey's International Man. It says, David Stockman on inflationary hell that's about to break loose. This is a great, great sentence. He says, double-digit inflation is now guaranteed and it will be long-lasting. That's because the Fed is occupied by what amounts to anti-Volckerism, and we can explain that. These group-addicted Keynesian crackpots are clueless about the dire inflationary fires now raging and are still buying bonds, QE, I guess that's quantitative easement, and planning
right.
And planning only a tepid 25 basis point rate increases when actually hundreds of basis points of rate increases are needed ASAP. Now, I couldn't find a date on the article, so I'm not exactly sure when you said that, because it also mentioned
oil
at $130,000.
I know when I said that. That was last winter. I think it was around February, March, when they finally said that we're going to raise interest rates from zero by 25 basis points. Now, since then, they've gone into a panic mode, and they've been raising them by 75 basis points a meeting, and we're up to 4% or 400 basis points, but that shows you how clueless these characters are. Back in March, it was, should we start raising rates or not, when it was long past the time that they, you know, we never should have had zero interest rates. That's absurd, because even then there was 2% or more inflation, so you had negative real rates. Why would anybody save money in order to fall increasingly behind in terms of the purchasing power of that money or that investment? So they were way behind the curve, and even then they, you know, tepidly raised rates by 25 basis points. Here we are not even a year later, and it's clear that they barely made a dent in inflation. You know, last month on the CPI, it was still 7.7%. Well, you know, so you can't live with 7.7% inflation, because in 15 years, your money would be worth half what it is today. It just won't work. And so the Fed is, you know, not even laid a glove on this monster yet. And therefore, there's going to be huge further increases in interest rates and a pretty rip-roaring recession before this is all over.
Wow. I want to ask you one question about, because the other part of your book is protect yourself from the coming inflation, but I want to understand the relationship of inflation and recession. It seems to me that inflation, which is government spending, government borrowing, government printing of money, inflates the money supply. That's like the accelerator. This is how I explain it to my audience, right? And the brake is interest rates. So you're standing on the accelerator by keeping the money coming in, by increasing the debt. You're fueling inflation at the same time that you want the Fed to put on the brakes with higher and higher interest rates. That's get smoking tires. It seems like we're not accomplishing anything here. So can you explain that, the inflation, recession, interest rates, that whole thing?
Yeah, it's the big conundrum. It's the big question of economics, but basically I would put it this way. If you create bad money, you're going to get bad economic consequences sooner or later. And when the Fed was increasing its balance sheet by $120 billion a month, which it was doing month in, month out, until, as we said, last March, when they finally pivoted a little bit towards restraint, you're putting spending power into the economy without the equivalent amount of production. You know, I'm sort of a great believer in something that was called Say's Law. And he was an economist. He was an economist 200 years ago who basically said economic life starts with production. Production creates a reward to the producers in the form of income and profits. The income and profits is then reinvested or spent, and that's kind of the process by which economies function and ultimately grow. But remember, it didn't start with spending. It didn't start with borrowing. It started with production. Okay, someone on a job producing something, a business, you know, delivering a good or service to the public. So if that's the fundamental correct sequence of economic life, then all of this cheap debt, which was designed deliberately by the Fed to add to spending, without any increase in production, was a huge mistake. And you get to the point where the Fed then has to throw on the brakes, raise interest rates. Now, it sounds like this is a mean thing to do, you know, but the interest rates that they're pushing up, the federal funds rate at 4%, is still way below inflation. So that's not high in any meaningful economic sense. You need to have interest rates that are higher than inflation.
Okay.
So that, you know, that an investor saver gets his money back at the end of the loan and maybe a little yield in the process. And therefore, we've got a long way to go yet.
Fascinating. Let's get to the other part of your book, Protect Yourself from the Coming Inflation. I know you can't give away the whole book, but can you give me some hints?
Yeah.
How do we do that?
Yeah, the first thing is stay out of the casino. In other words, we have so inflated the financial system. Wall Street is so waterlogged with all this excess credit that's been created by the Fed over decades and decades that it's an unsafe place to put your money. The stock market, the bond market, even real estate, which, you know, supposedly is a good hedge when you have inflationary times. It was that in the 1970s, but not now, because over the last three decades, real estate has been massively inflated due to easy money and low interest rates. So people borrowed hand over fist, speculators borrowed hand over fist, drove real estate prices sky high, both residential and, you know, commercial properties. And so as we go into this inflationary gale right now, the value of that real estate is not sustainable. As interest rates go up, the opposite happens as compared to what has occurred over the last couple of decades. That is, the value of real estate is going to go down. So it's not going to be a hedge. It's going to be a big loser. And that means that the three things people think about, stocks, bonds, and real estate, are not good answers going forward because of the mess that the central banks have created. What do people need to invest in? One, they need to invest in their own financial management. In other words, this is a very tough thing to contemplate, but we basically need to spend less, save more, and if you have a lot of debt, do whatever is possible to reduce it, including cashing out some assets that have had a pretty good run to pay down any debt that has been accumulated, because we're going into a pretty nasty economic environment for a sustained period of time. So the advice is stay out of the casino, spend less, save more, reduce debt, and invest some reasonable share of any available assets in gold, because when the central bank money finally fails, as it's in the process of doing, the one real money that's still in the world, gold, will increase in value, and certainly it's not going to decrease. Stocks, they have 10, 20, 40% down to go yet, depending on which sector of the market you're talking about. Bonds are way overvalued because interest rates have been way too low. So the point is the way to preserve asset value, preserve wealth in the period ahead is with something that's not going to lose value, and that's gold. And, you know, the point is capital preservation rather than appreciation. We've had so much appreciation over the last 20 or 30 years that there's no more left in the system.
Wow, this is really fascinating. So if we as individuals lower our personal debt, then throughout the economy that's going to have a positive effect? Because we can't stop inflation because we're not causing it. It's government. It seems like the money supply is what's causing the problem. And the Fed and everything you've explained so wonderfully. I'm going to have to listen to this over again. But if individuals, if consumers, just as regular folks, get rid of as much debt as we can during this period where you're not going to be investing in the normal growth things, stocks, bonds, and real estate, is that going to have an overall effect on the economy? Will that change inflation? Recession? What will that do?
Yes. Well, at the end of the day, remember I said spend less. In other words, to save, you got to spend less. Spending less is going to help cool down the economy. But I'm making this recommendation not because I think an individual consumer has a responsibility to correct a problem caused by Washington, the fiscal and monetary authorities, but because that's the only way to protect yourself, the only way to preserve wealth as we go through this inflationary storm they've created. But ultimately, Congress is going to have to stop spending, stop borrowing, and the Fed is going to have to stop printing. After a period of time of getting back to sound policies, inflation would come down because that's where the inflation comes from. It comes from Washington. It doesn't come from people working or a business trying to do better and expand its operations. It comes from the officials in Washington. So they're going to have to change policy in a big way. But in the interim, people have no choice except to stay out of the way because an enormous amount of economic turmoil and dislocation, as I call it, an inflationary storm, is coming down the pike.
I don't know how much more time you have, but I want to let you bring up
anything. Yeah, I'm sort of up against another deadline here.
Well, that's
so
fine. Okay. Well, then thank you so much for this. And, you know, spending, borrowing, and printing. And I wasn't thinking the individuals, we could change what the government policy is. Well, maybe a bit. But our collective action as individuals might have an overall effect. So I think I know what we need. So let's talk about the book, where to get it, any information, book signings, anything you want to talk about to help with our book here, The Great Money Bubble, Protect Yourself from the Coming Inflation.
Okay, well, I appreciate talking to you. The book is on Amazon, and it's very easy to get a hold of.
Okay. Sir, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you this morning. I really appreciate it.
Very good. We'll talk again. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, bye.
Bye now. Oh, boy. Let me play something, and I'll get back to my callers here. And just admit that was amazing. Yeah, let me see what we got here. Can I play that? I forgot which things I played. So I play something again. Yeah, you get over it. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITHcare.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Panglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Okay, now I can kick back for the rest of the show. We got Pianki in the line, and also Diane Warner, who's doing our election integrity report. Oh boy, that was fun. Pianki, go ahead.
I would have asked them about the Federal Reserve. Why come the U.S. Treasury can't perform those tasks?
No, it's a good question.
I would ask him about the U.S. The interest on the debt, which will double to close to $750 billion in the next 4 years.
No, you actually mentioned that. The interest on the debt's going to $1 trillion. I was going to bring up the point that that's bigger than our defense budget. But see, there's the balancing act when you have these folks on. Okay, so I have friends in high places that allow me to do these unbelievable interviews because we're not as big a national show as I want to be, and we will be once we get out from under our big tech suppression. So there's a balancing act. The balancing act is they come on to talk about a book. And so I want to make sure I talk about the book. But for me, I'm very selective of who I – yes, but I'm also very selective of who I ask on the show because I'm looking for people that can also help our citizen legislature. So I get the plugs in where I can. I ask them about our constitutional amendment to balance the budget. To take away the power of Congress to borrow money. Blah, 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 blah. There we go. Think, Greg. I've been on adrenaline for a little while here, so if I sound incoherent, that's why. I do get psyched up for these big interviews. Anyway, but the point is that I mentioned
one
that.
One more
I talked
thing
to
I want
to give. Oh, yeah, go on. We've got time now. We got time to talk.
Yeah,
yeah,
one more thing I would ask is that who does this interest go to?
We talked
and
about
who
that, too.
Owns,
we actually did.
Who owns these facilities that this interest goes to?
No, he said the 1%, the richest 1%, benefit from inflation because they buy the stocks and bonds, they get the increase in the interest, and they get the increase in the money. So that's who's making money. It's a transfer of wealth, and I'm going to go more into that. But again, here's the thing. So I have to ask about their book. I want to ask about Action Radio legislation. I got him my email so that he can contact me. And that's in the podcast. And the podcast goes to the folks that brought him here. So there's a strategy to this. On the other hand, I'm really curious to have him on because he's a very interesting person. He knows stuff that very few people know. He was the youngest person, a cabinet secretary in the 20th century. I mean, that's huge. So he was this really young guy that comes to Washington, gets in the Reagan administration, runs the Office of Management and Budget, caused all kind of controversy, did all kinds of wonderful things to cut back on the size of government, which he explained that's what Reagan wanted, right? And I agree. And then all of a sudden, you know, as he leaves, he's watching everything, all the good work that he did, gradually get taken away by the deep state, by the gelding old party. It's like, oh, you kind of chuckled at that. That was funny. So if you go back and listen to the podcast, I think you'll see that we really covered a lot. I want to listen to it, too, because there's so much in there. That was a rich interview. And so my goal is to let them talk. Let's hear about the book. But I want to make sure that they know that there's an alternative out there to business as usual, and that's us. And then we do have legislation. I had more bills to talk about. I had enough for 4 hours of interview, at least. And we usually only get about half an hour, which is great. But again, they want to stay longer. You know, I don't mind. I'm not going to tell them no. Diane Warner, who does our election integrity report, what do you think?
I think the thing that I would like to ask him is, why have we never audited the Fed?
Yeah, that was on my list, too. I sort of got that sense that once I talked enough about Action Radio, I really better concentrate on the book because that's what he's here for.
Why they don't audit the Fed.
Okay, go ahead.
Because if you audit the Fed, then you would have to reveal names where things are going.
Yep.
No, I agree.
Well, I think, honestly, if I get a chance to ask, and I'm sure he'll be back, but again, it's the first time on the show, so I want to leave him with a good impression. And that's why I immediately switched to talking about the book,
yes.
Because first of all, I was going
to
do that anyway.
The first time.
What's that? I don't overwhelm him, yeah. And I tend to overwhelm people, apparently. That's what I've heard, so I don't want to be overwhelming. So I'm getting a pretty good sense of, okay, let's do what's, I've done my bit. I got him what I wanted to. Same thing with Peter Navarro. I mean, I introduced him to I think, three bills. Vaccine product liability, the big tech censorship, and constitutional amendment to stop borrowing of money. So he's got to think about that. He's never heard that before, I think. That would be my guess. And so let's give us some time. Let him think about it. He's got my email now. It's on the record that hopefully, because, you can't bug these folks. I want to make sure that I'd like to have it voluntarily, but I'll see if I can reach him again. Yeah, I don't know, a couple months. After Christmas, after New Year's, and see if he wants to follow up with some of our – we have other proposals. Jonathan Mosley wrote a liquidity bill to handle all the debt that's going to come when the COVID spending stops. I have a bill that has a 30-day comment period that all budget items over $100 million, which is pretty low threshold, go to a 30-day comment just like a regulation. And another one is one of my favorites is the no withholding of income, no income tax withholding when you're earning your standard deduction, which is what most people use anyway. So if you use your standard deduction, it was $12,000 in 2019 when I wrote it. It's probably like 13 or 14. I don't know what it's going to be for 2022. But whatever it is, and when we do our taxes next year, that you should not have any money withheld during the time you're earning your standard deduction. So therefore, you don't have to wait for your money for next year. You get it this year. That would be a huge economic stimulus. And the only thing that it would cost would be the interest that the government's not entitled to for keeping your money for a year. Those are the kind of things I want to talk to you about. Those are where we go economically. But again, we've made a great start. I think we're on the way. There's a lot of things, and I have to make that decision during the interview. What can I ask? What can I not ask? Where do we focus? Where is it going? How do I get the greatest impression, the most information, the challenging questions, Action Radio, and talk about the reasons that are here, which is usually a book. So that's what's going through my mind. Panel?
Well, yeah, and your bills are good. But and you're hitting on the same issues that the Convention of States be hitting on, because Congress itself is not going to do it. It's going to take state legislation to make those amendments come through.
Yeah, but there's a problem, and I've talked about this on the show before. The problem is that the way the Constitution is written, the states cannot ratify without a constitutional convention per se, or a convention of states. In other words, in order for the states to propose an amendment to the Constitution, they have to have a convention of states to do it. I think that's a flaw in the Constitution, quite honestly. I wish the states could propose them independently and ratify them. And when enough states ratify, say three-quarters of the way it works now, if Congress has an amendment that they want to the Constitution, they pass it with two-thirds in both houses. Then it goes to the states for three-quarters of the states. If two-thirds of the House and Senate pass it, three-quarters of the state pass it, it becomes adopted into the Constitution. So I think the opposite should apply, too. If three-quarters of the states – hold on, so let me finish the example. If three-quarters of the states ratify a constitutional amendment, exactly the same one, word for word, comma for comma, the exact same amendment, if three-quarters of the states ratify it, then it should go to the Congress. And if two-thirds of the Congress also ratify it, then it should become part of the Constitution. But the idea that the states have to have a convention of states and the Congress can just do it on their own, I think that's a flaw in the Constitution.
Well, really, if it starts with the states and it's ratified the state, it becomes the amendment to the Constitution.
Right.
See, Congress is not going
to
do it.
But the convention of states is the problem, though, because you can bring in anything. Once the states are convening, who's to say it doesn't go to a constitutional convention? See, that's the problem with it.
Because it only takes 13 states to throw it away. That's why. So if it starts with the state, Greg, look, you need to come to some of these discussions where you don't have to argue about this. I'm a member of the Louisiana Convention of States, and we talk about this all the time.
Okay.
The Congress is not going to do it. They are not going to do it.
Well,
if you're stealing from the candy store, they're not going to stop. So it takes the states to put it into effect.
So I agree with you there. So our disagreement really is in the procedure. I am worried, And I don't think this is arguing. I think this is just discussing the issue. I mean, you know, obviously,
we have
if 20
states that have signed on to this and they agree to it.
Okay.
We just need 14 more, 18 more, maybe 14 more. I think it is. I get the numbers correct.
So
these
how
states'
do you...
legislatures have already agreed to it. You need to get more involved. Go ahead with your guests.
Well, that's Diane. She's a regular reporter. She's also a friend of mine. But the thing is, we've got the whole next hour to do that. But I want to get this kind of settled, because the danger, and this is where I think the convention of states idea is flawed, is that you cannot, once you open up the states and then the liberal states come in and the liberal media comes in, you're going to lose control of it. Not you, but I mean the convention of states, the conservative states that want to have specific constitutional amendments will lose control of that convention, and all kinds of really bad things are going to be proposed, and then you're going to be stuck with them, unless, of course, you vote them down. I'm not willing to take that risk. I don't think it's a good idea. I want the states to pass a resolution
saying that we want this. I am willing to take that risk as a citizen of this country, a natural one. I'm willing to take that risk.
Okay.
Hell, we got Illinois it's looking at to come on. You got Michigan that we're working on. So that's the only way. You can't go to Congress. Congress not going to do it. If Congress was going to do it, we wouldn't even be having these conversations now. It's a good idea to me.
No, the goal is right. I think the method of getting there is flawed. What I would rather, and here's my proposal, is that the states individually, you know, through a resolution, which is non-binding, of course, but they ratify the resolution that passes a constitutional amendment that stops Congress from borrowing money. When 75% of the states do that, that's enough to pass a constitutional amendment. That should those states should then start pressuring Congress by withholding money, by canceling some of their laws, overturning them in state Supreme Courts, and doing anything they can to put pressure. And, of course, the people will do that, too, in elections, saying, look, we want to stop Congress from borrowing money. So the people combined with the states can bring this about in Congress. That's what I believe. And you don't subject the Constitution to an open convention where anything else can be changed.
You're not opening up the Constitution. You're talking about amendments to the Constitution.
Right. But
you
an
can't
amendment
open
can
up
be
the
anything. But an amendment
can
be
the Constitution. If you open up the Constitution, then all bets are off. I can go out and kill people. I won't face any criminal prosecution because there's nothing that would say I can't do it.
No, that's we're not talking about the U.S. Code. We're not talking about the state laws either. But the actual Constitution, if you open it up to amendments, then it could, then anything in the Constitution currently can also be amended. That's the problem.
Well, I don't. From if you listen to how Article 5 is explained, that's not the case.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Do you know the head of the Missouri Convention of States director?
I'm in Louisiana now.
Okay.
We have meetings sometimes twice a week.
Okay. Can you bring anybody to the show that I can talk to about this?
I think you have to go to them because their schedules are packed. They have speakers, people piling in, and so on, so on, so on. So I guess it's just one of those things that you're going to have to get in line. But
I had Mark Meckler on the show, and I wasn't as opposed to it then when I had him on. This is back at WBY, one of my classic interviews. I'll get him back. I'll talk to Mark. I'll go right to the top. I don't mind. Diane, why don't you jump in here? Let's see what you think of all this. You've been patiently listening as we get to your election integrity report.
Yeah, this is not my wheelhouse. Sorry.
You just want to pass?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. All right, go ahead.
Well, I worry about the Fed. This is a giant Ponzi scheme, and he confirmed it all today. So I've always just had major concerns about that. But I don't honestly know. I actually go to a lot of the convention of states meetings, and it sounds good, but I don't honestly know that much about it. So that's
well. Let's go over Article 5. Let's go directly to Article 5, then we'll get to your report. And so Article 5 of the Constitution, Article 5 says, the Congress, whenever 2/3 of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution or, comma, on the application of the legislatures of 2/3 of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which means they don't have to know that they are going in. They can propose amendments during the convention, which The Constitution says in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes. As part of this Constitution, when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made part – okay, there we go. Little local stuff. So, yeah, so the two ways to do it are as Congress by ratification and the states by a convention of states.
Congress has no effect on it. The only requirement of Congress is to set a place of convening, and if they don't, then the states can do it on their own. Mm-hmm. Congress has no control over the states. I mean, the power of Congress comes from the states. And that's one thing, and I was going to ask this lady not to be insulted, but did you learn coming up through your educational years in school, did you learn anything about the founding documents of the United States? Was that taught to you?
Me?
Yes, you. You're the only two people on right now. So, Pianki, meet Diane. Diane, meet Pianki. Pianki's regularly calling me every day, which I love, by the way, even when we disagree. Go ahead, Diane.
Oh, I've got a couple of real good friends that are in the Convention of States now, and I'm sure that they'd be more than happy to come in and talk to you about it.
Okay, good.
Well, I know we have them here, but what I was asking, when you was coming up through your educational years, elementary school and so on, was you taught anything about the U.S. Constitution and its founding documents of the United States?
Very little.
See, but that's what I say. That is the problem, and it's, I think, an intentionally doing so that the U.S. public will be not knowledgeable of what powers that they have and how all this works.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that we're taught what they want us to learn.
Yeah. I think we have a couple of the same convention of states folks too. And I think I've already asked one of them on. And so, yeah, well, I'll go to Mark McClure. Let's go right to the top. Let's see if he'll come back on and talk to me and, see if we'll see what happens. It'd be interesting. All right, let's talk about elections. So we have our new election report, election integrity report with Diane Warner. And so it starts in 4 minutes, but we're going to start early because she called in early, which is always a good thing. But I was curious what you thought of David Stockman too. Again, these interviews are huge when I get the chance to do this. And so I am, it's one of the few times I get nervous on the show. And David, when I had Peter Navarro, Wendy Rogers, some of the bigger people, when I first had Dr. Walter Williams way back at WBY, these are big events, for me to be able to talk to these people. It's one of the biggest reasons I got into radio was so that I could be able to talk to people instead of screaming at my radio while listening to somebody else talk to them. That was kind of fun. So Diane, welcome back. Reintroduce yourself. And let's talk about all the fraud that's out there, which is rather legion at this particular time.
Wow. It's like a fire hose coming in every day. Mm-hmm. There's more and more. And it's quite telling of when it's like a big tinderbox. When is all this just going to explode?
That's a good question. Define explode. What are you looking for as far as that goes? What do you think is going to happen?
Accountability. Okay. I want mainstream media to actually start telling the truth and start sharing some of the stuff that's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. Some media is. Lindell TV is. Steve Bannon, Emerald Robinson, Brandon House. Two of them have been on the show, Emerald and Brandon. I haven't got Steve Bannon yet. I'm working on it. So they're reporting it. One American News, Newsmax are pretty good. Although Newsmax is a little squishy. Go ahead.
Those are the ones I consider our channels, but I'm talking about
our channels.
The
there's our channels and their channels. It's one of us.
Yeah.
You get a little fuzzy in your line a bit, so I don't know if you're moving away from the phone slightly or something like that. We got to get you a microphone. So Christmas is coming up, so you need to make big requests.
I need to ask Santa for a microphone.
you ask Santa for a Yeti blue microphone. So write that down, Yeti blue microphone, and you can get a cheap headset. So Yeti blue microphones, that's what I use. That's what most podcasters use until we get our big, our professional, really big professional microphones. So what this does, it plugs directly in your computer, and I send you a direct connect, an email invite, so that you can broadcast directly through your Yeti blue connected to your computer directly online. It's clearer, it's better. But every once in a while, like the other day, it cuts out, and I had to call in on my cell phone. So you got a cell phone backup. But I think you'll enjoy it. They're fun. So, yeah, ask Santa, you know, to come down the chimney with a microphone, and away you go. We'll make you a real radio star.
Awesome. I did pick your speakerphone. Does that help?
That's okay. Yeah, that's better. Yeah. But I don't like you putting your phone up to your head. Hopefully you've got earbuds because the radiation is not good. That's a report I've yet to do on cell phone radiation. But, yeah, it's I don't know. I'd rather have you on speakerphone than not having it next to your head. But that's just me. Anyway, back to election integrity. So let's pick our fires one by one. Well, actually, now let's go back to what you were saying a minute ago, that you think this is all going to explode one day. And I'm thinking there's 7 slates of Trump electors out there. State legislatures are not putting them forward. They're not disqualifying Brandon electors, even though we know Brandon didn't win. He came to power at an insurrection, and we know that because we have all these Trump electors that were never considered on January 6th, and we know they weren't considered. That's why they had the coup January 6th, the January 6th committee, and everything else. So everything's designed to keep the Trump electors out of the news, out of Congress, and out of the situation. And yet, Arizona had a big audit, but they never followed up. They never did anything with it. You know, and so they never put their Brandon electors forward. Out. They didn't disqualify their Brandon electors. They didn't put forward their Trump electors. Neither have Nevada, New Mexico, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Georgia, the other battleground states that have Trump electors still out there, still viable. They're not going away. So where's the explosion? Where's the fire? I think the geldings won't do it. I think they've already surrendered. The surrender party has done what they always do. Diane?
I don't know. I think you get a lot of blackmail. You get a lot of people that get intimidated, coerced, and then they don't tell the truth. And I met with – the delegation meeting was last Thursday in Gulf Breeze.
Which delegation?
Senator Broxson was there, Andrade, and Redmond. And I asked to speak, and then afterwards I actually talked to Redmond for a while, and he gave me some really good ideas. That's what I had called you about. But the ideas that he gave me are, he said, Diana goes, he basically wants me to do his job for him. But that's okay, because we can.
See, how about that? Okay. So these are local. Just
he wants
us. We're Milton. We're in Milton, Florida.
Florida.
We're talking about Florida state legislators. Okay, so Joel Rudman is a state representative.
Our state rep.
Doug Broxson. Uh-huh. Right. Doug Broxson is our state senator.
Yes.
He's the one that voted the gun control thing after Douglas.
Yeah.
And Andrade is another state representative. So we're talking 2 state representatives
and
a state senator that all represent our area here in Milton, Florida, next to Pensacola. So this is the folks in Turkey and South Korea know what we're talking about. That's why I do it.
Yes. Okay. Well, I had written up, I knew I only got 4 minutes to speak, and I had written up a bunch of different ideas that we'd like to change for legislation. And then I spoke with Rudman afterwards, and he said, if you pick the statute, he goes, send me a statute, put a line through what you want to remove and put in there what you want to add. And he said, and that will help me to get it through a lot faster. And he also said that if you want to, like, remove Eric or remove the machines, then you need to give me a state that's already done it, and I can walk in and say, at the Senate, hey, look what Louisiana's doing, or look what New Mexico's doing, and, why aren't we doing this? And he goes, that's the most effective way to move your legislation. So,
well,
I mean,
he's just said, Action Radio, please be Action Radio. This is a gift.
Exactly.
So let's do it. Let's write a bill. So we got to talk off air. so we need 2 bills. So we got to get so no Eric. You should. What's that acronym again?
Yes.
Just so people know, we're not talking about some dude.
Electronic registration information. It's
okay.
Acronym.
And corruption. Is that what the C stands for?
Right.
I'm teasing you.
I'm looking for it. Electronic Registration Information Center.
Okay, and so that's the first bill. So no Eric. I've got no with one of those circles and line through it. And what was the other one?
Eric's horrible.
And the other one's get rid of the voting machines.
We get rid of the voting machines, anything electronic, we got to get rid of it.
Okay. Is there a safe tabulating machine that has no possible way to have any kind of electronic connection to the internet at all that only scans and shows numbers?
I have not found one.
Okay.
I don't.
So we need to say that in the bill.
I have not found
there
one.
Are no viable, safe non-transmissible, non-hackable voting machines in existence at this time. We need to say that in the bill.
Well, yeah, and you never know if people have – you'd have to completely open up a machine every time before you use it in every center to make sure that they haven't added anything to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that we just need to stay away from the machines because that
okay.
is just a waste
that.
Of time.
Yeah, yeah.
So
now, how about – no, go ahead.
Well, if also if we implement what – and I like your thoughts as well, too, on – like, I was talking to my husband about this.
Mm-hmm.
He said if we – every 2 years we redo the voter registration. I think every year is too much.
I'm happy with
but
2 years.
That's
a good modification. Yeah. I always ask
yeah,
for the strictness because it's easier to negotiate down than negotiate up. So
yeah.
I propose a year, and then you say, well, we're going to compromise. We'll make it 2 years. But before I proposed 1 year, nobody was thinking of anything. So that's basic political negotiation 101.
Yeah.
That's why we do it. But I also
believe. After the moon.
Yeah, exactly. But I also believe that it should be every year. But that's just me. If we're doing our car every year, you know, why can't we do our voter registration? And you can do, once you've established your residency in a county, I think you'd be able to do that online or even phone call or something like that not a phone call, but a secure online re-registration. You wouldn't have to go in person, but you would have to go in person the first time with your passport, birth certificate, social security cards. Well, you need whatever the valid forms of citizenship ID. I think passport's the most viable.
Prove you're a citizen, exactly.
Citizen, yeah. Well, I did that when I came to Florida.
So many people.
Yeah, I did prove I was a citizen. I brought in my naturalization papers and my passport and said, yep, here's me. And so and they were
so
like,
much
great.
Cheating now on citizenship. So much cheating on citizenship now. So.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, there is. Well, that's another thing. Well, let's get back to this convention, this delegation. So who was it sponsored by? Where were you? And let's go back to our local political, the Broxson Andrade Rudman Coalition, because I guess they're going to be working together since they're both representatives are in the district of the senator. So what was it all about? What happened? This is kind of cool.
They just let the citizens speak. You could sign off a few days before it. You had to send in your registration to be able to speak. And there was probably about 15, 20 different people
mm-hmm.
that got up and spoke and on just all different things that they wanted to ask.
Hmm.
Well, they can't,
so
you're not really asking them, but you're.
Yeah. Was this recorded?
I don't know. I know that some of the people in the audience were recording stuff and putting it online, but I don't know if there was actually a recording or not, but the time goes so fast. I had so much more I wanted to say, but I wrote it all out and I handed them each. So I know they got all of my talking points
mm-hmm.
so they could,
well, you can make
home.
It here.
Not sure they read them. They might've put them in the trash.
See, that's what I want to know. How do we follow? Is there follow up on this? In other words, the things that people said, you know, how do we hold them accountable for what people said? And they can still say, I can't do that. And that's fine. That's their prerogative as legislators. They can say, I can't do that. And they say, okay, fine. I'll take that into consideration at the next election. And that's our prerogative. This is how it works. But you still should be able to hold them accountable.
They weren't making any speeches. They didn't make any speeches at this.
So they just
sat
there.
It was only the public. It's only the public talking to them.
Okay.
So
who sponsored this? Who sponsored this?
It was in Gulf Breeze. They did it here last year. But it was JR.
Is it a Republican group? Is it Gulf Breeze Patriots or friends of mine? Who?
No, it was at the county commissioner's meeting. It was.
Was this a government?
The commissioner's building.
So a government function then? Oh, okay.
I think so, because this was at. I don't know the name of it. It's in Gulf Breeze. I can give you the address. But it was at a, like their YMCA almost. You had all these people running.
YMCA. It's time to see at the YMCA. We used to play that after every tour. I was on these duck boats, right? And I come back to Fisherman's Wharf. And everybody wanted to do YMCA so they could all stand up and dance as we go down Fisherman's Wharf. It was great fun. All right. Anyway, I digress. Past life. I didn't think I got to. Listen, tell you, being a tour guide is great training for talk radio. You know, because not only do you have to talk, you have to drive, and you have to watch people and watch traffic, and be coherent, and play music all at the same time. It's kind of like what I do here, except I'm not driving. It's about the only difference, and I'm not playing music that much. But I got buttons, just like I had buttons there at a soundtrack the whole bit. So yeah, that's fun. And they did dance in the aisles while we were moving. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. So you know, those were the good old days of tour guiding. It's gone now with apps. People don't go take tour guides anymore. They don't care. You got smart-ass 12-year-olds saying, you didn't say this. I looked up what you're talking about. Thanks, kid. You want to do the tour? No. Okay, fine. Shut the hell up. Well, I couldn't say that. Their parents were there.
Nice.
This, you know, tour guiding is not what it used to be, although I had some really fun moments, especially when the Blue Angels flew over us when we were on the Golden Gate Bridge. That was really cool in an open-air cable car. So, well, I'll tell a story sometime. Let's get back to election stuff. So the government sanctioned this. The government, this is a government-sponsored event. So the question is, how do we do follow-up? Did they write up anything? Is there a summary of minutes? Is there a summary of the speakers? I would ask them that. It's like, so we had this great meeting. You know, was it just for us to vent? Was it like a group therapy session or something going to come of this? That would be my question.
It's to vent. It's only to vent, I do believe. So it's just let the public speak to the delegation. So I think that's basically what it's for, because there weren't any speeches from, you know, Broxson and Rudman and Andrade. They didn't say much.
So they never addressed the concerns. They never said, hey, that's a great idea. Let me write that down. Hey, why don't you follow up with me next week? They never said anything like that.
Well, Broxson did speak with one woman about something, but I'm not sure. It didn't have anything to do with the election integrity. So, but I don't know. I have no idea if
that's
follow up or not.
Well, that's an open statement. We have their friends that they go
to lunch.
It was
nice Well, Rudman stayed afterward, and we had a lot of our county commissioners were there. So, and they stayed, mm-hmm. and they were available to talk to. And I know that that Carrie Smith stayed, and Ray Eddington was there, and so was Colton Wright. So, you know, we had a lot of our, you know, county.
Do you know
people
these folks?
Because you
can invite them on your report. I'd love to have them as guests. I mean, you don't have to talk all the flaws in the election stuff all the time. I'd love to have some of these newer representatives on before they're corrupt and become, you know, part of the dark side of the force that works against us. Now's the time to talk to them.
Yeah, I'm real good friends with Carrie Smith.
Let's get Carrie on. Carrie's good.
He's awesome.
Yeah, and people think, you know, and I make this point all the time. I say, well, Greg, why are you doing local politics? Well, because our politics are your politics. You know, you have a Kerry Smith in your town. You have a Joel Rubin in your town. You have an Alex Andrade in your town. You have a Doug Broxton in your town. You've got all the same people. They don't change that much, okay? So local politics is local politics. But if we can talk about ways to help influence.
And I've
politics.
Gotten to know Joel pretty well, too.
Mm-hmm. He's been on the show once. Listen to my interview with
Joel.
Oh, he was on the show. Once. I say once because I invited him back and he didn't come back.
I really appreciated that he gave me that, you know, that good of tips to be able to help him. And if we want it done right, I mean, if we want him to push this forward, we kind of got to do it the way he wants it. So, but that's okay. I mean, I'm happy to put the effort into it, and we can get our collaborative minds together and come up with some more bills that hopefully he'll help push through.
Well, let's do
I'm
our,
not
so,
sure that they really started.
What are you going to call your bill? Santa Rosa County Election Integrity Bill, or the Florida State Election Integrity Bill? Or is it going to be election? Yeah, let's just focus on elections, first of all.
We need to. It's a state. We need a state bill. We need to get rid of Eric, and we need to get rid of the machine. So that will help Santa Rosa as well.
So here's your title. Yeah. All right. So are you on your computer?
Yes.
Okay. Go to writeyourlaws.com. We're going to legislate.
Okay, hang on one second.
Well, I got time. Pianki, how
you
doing?
Oh, you want to do this now? I thought we were going to do this off air.
No, we're going to do it on air. It's much more fun. But if anything that I talk about that you don't want to talk about on the air, just say, Greg, let's do this off the air. So you're always free to do that. Don't feel you're never compelled to answer or say anything. And I tell everybody this just because I'll ask impossible questions. Or if you don't know something, say, I don't know, no idea what you're talking about, Greg. Why don't you ask me? Give me a week. It's like, okay, fine. So we're very flexible. But the whole purpose of the show
is
to show people.
There's a lot more that I would rather like uncover as far as election fraud that's happened in the state.
Okay.
So
well, let's just get the bill
understand.
Started. Yeah, let's get a bill started. This will be easy. And so are you on writeyourlaws.com?
Writeyourlaws.com.
Yep, WriteYourLaws. I'm teaching you so that I'm actually teaching everybody that listens to this podcast. So there's a method to my madness. Always.
Write your own law. Write my law.
Your laws.
Right.
Yeah. This is the other half of the show. This is the half off the air. So write, WriteYour,
WriteYourLaws, L-A-W-S, WriteYourLaws.com. I know you didn't expect this, but this is what makes it fun. She's like, Greg, why are you doing this to me? You didn't tell me we were going to write a bill on the air. I didn't know until just now.
Yeah, those bills.
Jackie knows.
It's not coming up.
If I didn't write it in right.
Yeah.
And those bills, that's when you deliver them, you hand deliver them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got a group, see, when legislation,
you
see a group of people coming to them, they get scared.
Yeah, we're gonna put this into a group, and we're gonna have there's a couple of good groups around here, like Gulf Breeze Patriots and some of the other folks, even Convention of States folks, might want to take up this bill, and then we'll get to various reform people. We'll get around the state. We'll contact local media, state media, national media. We'll do what we do best, which is be advocates. There are no journalists on this show, folks. Just to let anybody know, we're not journalists. Okay, we're not impartial. We're advocates, pure and simple. So go to www.writeyourlaws.com. That's W-R-I-T-E. That's probably where you're making your mistake. Let me know when you
I'm
got it.
I'm putting it in here. Nothing's coming up.
Okay, I know it. I know it works because I was on it this morning with David Stockman. So let's see if something happened. In the meantime,
I'm on DuckDuckGo. Is it DuckDuckGo that doesn't like it?
It should
okay,
be.
Okay, here it goes.
www.writeyourlaws.com. Okay, good. So,
okay,
what you want to do now? So you see that beautiful homepage? Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So you look at the top of the menu bar. You'll have the homepage. That's where you are now. Immediately to your right is legislation.
Yeah.
Click on that.
Propose a new law.
Click on that. You got it. So,
okay.
Diane Warner, citizen legislator, you're about to cross into a whole new world of fun and adventure. So what you want to do is put your name, put your email. That's confidential, so we don't publish emails. Let's make up a title. We don't have to get this all the way done. We'll just do this partially. Let's call it the Florida Election Integrity Act of 2023, because that's where it's going to go. We're almost out of this year. How's that sound?
Okay.
Now just start making notes. So in the section, so then you're gonna click on Citizen Bill Ideas, because I don't know why, but that's just part of the website. It has to go somewhere. Then you have to answer a stupid question like 1 + 1 = 2. And once you've answered your stupid question, you'll see a part there that's the main part of the thing that says what you're doing. That's where the bill text goes.
Okay.
All right. So now what you want to do is just start making notes. And what you can make notes on a separate file. That's what I usually do. I usually write them separately and then put them in here. But that's where you're going to put in, so you can make notes to yourself. You know, number one, get rid of voting machines. Number two, decertify Eric. You know, number three, whatever your main points are that you want in this bill. Have registrations expire every 2 years. That'd be your third point. So you can actually save that, and then you can go back to it. And I'm not going to publish this bill until it's done. So you get to work on it, you know, in the meantime. Ask your friends, get some cooperation, do whatever you want to do, talk to me. But that's what we need.
Okay.
So all the things you want to put in there, it's going to go in that bill.
What
and
do you say to that?
What do I say to what?
What do you save it at? This only says submit.
Oh, well, I guess it would be, then we'd have to change it. All right, I'll tell you what. Why don't you just... In this case, just to be on the safe side, don't save it. Just copy those notes that you made, because now you know how to do it, right? So
yeah.
Just copy the notes, put it on a separate document or a separate file. We'll write the bill out. And then when you go back to it again, then you'll submit it, and then I'll see it, and then I'll publish it. So let's work on it in the meantime. But now you know how to do it. And I want to do that so everybody knows how to do it. That's how simple it is to post a bill here, folks. You go to writeyourlaws.com. You click on legislation. You go to propose a new law. You fill in your name, your email, which is confidential, the bill title, answer a stupid question, click on Citizen Bill Ideas, and then paste in the contents of your bill. And it can be amended, too. And then what we do is for amendments, people just put a comment on their bill. So I have the bill author. When they want to change something, they post a comment. Well, I take the comment and change the bill myself, because I get to edit all these. It's a pretty cool system. And then once you get
it's
the bill
easy.
Link... Yeah, it's really easy. It's disgustingly easy. It's so easy, in fact, you know, but that was part of the idea. It had to be easy.
I don't want people thinking this is for lawyers and complex things, and it doesn't take years of training, doesn't take learned people, you know, with black robes.
It took me 5 minutes.
It takes 5 minutes. Yeah, that's it. So now when you write the bill, you're literally going to do just what you did, and you're going to paste in your bill, and you're going to hit submit. I'm going to see it and go, wow, Diane's bill is really cool. And then we're going to look at it and amend it and talk about it. And then everybody who gets the link to that bill, once it's on writeyourlaws.com, those bill links can be sent worldwide by everybody. So that's how you lobby it.
Yeah.
You send it to media. You send it to government. Go ahead.
And I got some great guys on my team that are really good with the statutes. So a couple of them.
Well, write them in English. Yeah. Don't write them in legalese. Write them in English. Law should be written in English so people can read them. So your team, what your team can do, and this is going to be really helpful, is you want to go into the Florida statutes, the Florida code, and find out where the election laws are and where you're going to put. See, this is the hardest part of the bill is actually not the writing of the bill. It's where to put it. So you got to find where exactly in the statute we're going to put this. So that makes – so when Joel Rubin said, you know, you want to make his life easy, you want to do his job for him, that's what you said about him. That's exactly what we want to do because that's what the lobbyists are doing. That's what the anti-education, the critical race theory, the environmental wackos, the George Soros district attorneys, that's what they're doing. Those
the
are
the lobbyists.
Another thing.
Yeah, go ahead, Bianchi.
Another thing, your group maybe consists of 20 people. You need to target those candidates that's running for office and tell them that if you support this, we'll support you. You may have to combine strength with other groups that's biting for this candidate to carry forth their agenda. Because once you go to an established politician, they have already been prescribed by the lobbyists and others who help them to get to where they are, and they are fulfilling their wishes. That's why come the citizens never get their agendas across because they come in on the back end. They need to be coming in on the front end. If Greg is running for office, you say, Greg, we need for this bill to get attention. And if you do so, we will support you. We will support you at the poll. We will talk to our friends and neighbors and so on and so on and so on. But once Greg is elected, Greg don't really have to listen to you because he's already elected.
Yeah. Well, we have another group that I'm involved in and that we are, you know, searching for candidates and we are doing background checks on them and before we get behind them. And so I want to have a real good rapport with just about everybody that gets elected for the next, whatever, 10 years. So I will be able to walk to them and go, hey, let's look at this bill. We need some support and, you know, have that relationship where you can get it and know that you put somebody in office that's going to help you support to get election integrity back into office. Because, I mean, if we don't have that, we're going to lose our freedom. It's just, I don't know that people really understand the gravity of this. And
I think they understand, but they don't know what to do about it. And this is what Action Radio is all about. You know, we give a very simple way for you, for example. I don't think you had any idea how easy it was to write a bill and to get it out there.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, too.
Yeah.
Not only will the folks here look at it, your group will look at it, but people in other parts of Florida is going to look at it. People in every state is going to look at it. We have a growing following in Canada, Australia, and New Zealand and England that are going to be looking at it. You know, they're going to have to adapt it to a parliamentary system, which I want to learn how to write bills for that system. You know, I mean, I already did that with the Australian Bill of Rights. I mean, I want to learn how to write bills for everything. We talked about this the other day, monarchies, you know, dictatorships, you know, Iranian fundamentalist theocracies. I want to learn how to write bills for all of them. I just don't want people killed in the process. You know, I don't want to try and avoid that.
Yeah, but, that would be important.
Oh, listen, you write some of the – well, you go to China and tell Xi Jinping that you have a bill that you want to write. How long do you think you're going to be alive? Not long.
Yeah.
You know,
we don't
so China's
want to live there until on that.
Yeah, exactly. So China's our last stop. Go ahead, Pianchi.
I was going to tell her we wrote a bill on the ballot, that the federal ballot with candidates, the ballots with federal candidates, congressperson, U.S. senator, and president should be separate from state and local. And they should have their own vetting system, similar to U.S. passport, of who can cast a vote on those ballots. Because this is the reason why. If you got the federal candidates on a local or state ballot, especially locals, because locals allow illegals to vote. Well, what's to keep them from walking up ballot and putting marks by any of those names? There's nothing. You don't know when the ballot is turned in. You don't know who turned it in. There's no name, description, ID on it. So they should be separate.
Well, the other thing is you've got to safeguard that. How are you going to check that that the local folks aren't given a federal ballot too?
Well, if they qualify, they can get a federal ballot. If they have the proper identification.
Right, but who's to say that they won't?
To get a passport, the identification to get a passport is more than just producing the driver's license. You got
to
show that you're a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, but you'd have to standardize the federal ballots. That would have to be the state legislatures would have to make sure that everybody has the same standard for federal ballots. See, this is where I'm
questioning. No. The federal, the Congress can set the standards for a federal ballot. State and local can set the standards for their own ballots because they're different countries. Florida is different from New York. New York is different from Missouri. But
yeah,
the federal
ballots
can be standardized.
No, we talk just for Diane. We talk about the states as countries. I call them nation states. Bianchi calls them countries because they are separate entities. So I have to. I think you're right on that. I'm pretty sure. I just have to check it because I want to make sure that that's in your bill. So Diane, you want to take a look at Bianchi's bill? Absolutely. It's a great idea. I just
well,
like I said,
you know what
detailed.
Might help is if if we got some legislation that would demand that our DMV actually checks for nationality, to see if people are citizens. That would actually help.
I got a bill. I've already got a bill on that. I've got a bill. Well, I don't care what the courts say. The courts are not representative. They don't make laws. They can't tell us what we can't do. So I already have a bill on that. It's called the Citizenship ID Bill. So what it does is it puts your citizenship right on your driver's license. You know, American, permanent resident.
But the thing about that is, Greg, it's got to be verified, and that's what Pete Antonucci was saying, is that the DMV,
who?
That people are just – Pete Antonucci. He this is one thing that I wanted to talk about last week, but we ran out of time. He was appointed by he was appointed by DeSantis to be the head of the crimes, the Election Crimes Committee, and he actually died. He died of a massive heart attack in last August.
Oh, sure
August.
He did.
And,
did he get a vaccine?
Well, he was in. I don't know. It worries me, but he ended up having a very. This is from what I heard. I wasn't there, so I didn't verify it. But he was in a heated argument at the SOE's office. He walked out in the hall and died of a massive heart attack. So, but he was like one of the few up there that he was actually really. He was really actually. Investigating and worried, and he hates Eric. He was really looking into Eric, and he also said that our voter registration is flawed and it has major problems. And so what I started looking into is that, well, and I don't really want to tell people how to do this, but there is a way that illegals can get registered fairly easily, and it's not verified. So
what you do is you put that in the bill.
You know another way.
The illegals already
another
know
way they get registered is because the federal government was issuing those I-10 individual tax identification numbers to illegals who don't qualify for Social Security card, and they can use those I-10 as a reference on home mortgages, and they are issuing they are receiving loans for home mortgage. Well, once you get a home mortgage that shows a resident address, you just take that to the voter's registration. You can register to vote, even though you're illegal.
Yeah, illegals shouldn't be able to get home mortgages. I would have. So now here's just to expand on this, and I want you to take a look at this for a future show. Our citizenship ID bill, it puts your citizenship on your driver's license so that law enforcement doesn't have to go investigating. It's right there, okay? And your citizenship is public information. It's not private. You know, when you leave the country or you come into the United States, you have to declare your citizenship right there, you know, at Customs and Immigration or Homeland Security now in front of everybody. So it's not like it's a private thing. So if you have a visa, your expiration date should be on your driver's license, because people on visas, they can get driver's licenses. They can't use it for voting, of course.
Yeah.
But if they're a visa holder and you have their expiration date, so if they're there, if their visa is expired, yet their driver's license hasn't, well, then you report them to ICE and you get them out of here. Same thing with permanent residents. Your permanent when I had a green card, okay, I was driving as a Canadian citizen before I got my American citizenship on a green card. That should be on the driver's license. And then your citizenship, if you're a natural-born American or a naturalized American, that should be on your driver's license so that law enforcement has, you know, whenever they pull you over, we could find so many people, so many illegals, if you simply had citizenship on your driver's license. And then what you do once it's there is that you require the proof of citizenship. In other words, you show your driver's license for pretty much everything, to get a bank account, to get a credit card, to get a job, to get a mortgage, to rent a place, to rent a car, to send money out of the country, to receive money from out of the country. Well, of course, to vote. The vote and serve on the jury are the easy ones. But I'm saying, but everything else, I'm talking, yeah, I was thinking beyond that. But there's like a list of 20 things where you have to prove your citizenship to buy a gun, to do all kinds of things. But it's right there on your driver's license, so it's not a problem. It's right there.
Yeah.
So once you put citizenship on the driver's license and you require it for virtually everything, for any financial transaction, or in other words, you the goal is to make it impossible for illegal aliens to function here. So they leave.
Well,
that's how you do it.
I want it to be a verified citizenship because I don't think the DMV is verifying it, and I don't think that our SOE offices are not verifying it, and that's
right.
The point. They're sneaking in. I think I did say this on the show last week, but like 48% of the people that had been checked for the mail-in ballots in Arizona, their social security number didn't match their ballot, the name, the last name on the ballot. So look how many the fraudulent ballots there were, and I think a lot of them snuck in by illegally registering at the DMV. So that's just some things
there's
that
no
we really
to
need
them.
To. Yeah.
There's no way to check them. The license would have to say not verified for federal election, not verified for state election or local election, because you got some local communities think it's fine for illegals to vote, especially for school board issues.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you
and
arrest
then we got
those people. You got to arrest them. Yeah.
Well, then we got the spouses that work for the state and the other one works for the federal and they help with each other's elections and that gets really crooked. So,
well, we're not
we
perfect.
To,
we're just trying to you know, fix it as much as we can. But the thing is that there was a clause in that bill that says that this is verified. In other words, in order to get your driver's license and your citizenship declaration, you have to go through a passport or naturalization papers or something like that. So the DMV is not certifying your citizenship. They're just putting it on your driver's license. So, yes, it could be corruption.
Yeah, to get a driver's license, you just need to show – to get a driver's license, you can just show a cable bill in some state.
Right. But in order for it to be used for ID purposes for voting, then you have to have your citizenship, you know, emblazoned, you know, on the driver's license itself.
It has to be specific like that. Yes, I agree with you.
That'll work.
Because that's the problem. You got a lot of people that's not even supposed to be in the country that's voting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. Diane, would you want to incorporate that into your bill, or do you want to do that as a separate bill? Or do you want to take a look at it first? I can send it to you.
I think I would rather make singular bills with like one main issue and put it out. And,
well, you can do
a
couple of
them.
Yeah. You can bring a couple things under
really
election integrity.
I get really sick of the legislation going in. And I mean, we don't have line item veto, which I think that is so important. And they just put... I hate it when they go on and they put a 900-page bill in, and then on the very last part of the bill, they put in, you know, $1 million for gender studies in Zimbabwe. You know,
just a crazy example.
Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous, and that's in fine print at the very bottom. And you know, the pork that we have allowed these people to get away with is just, and it's our fault. We haven't held them accountable. You know, all these years, it's like, we don't know what they're doing in Washington. We just kind of ignore it. But I would like to go make things much more simple, our election reform, with legislation. Have simple bills, put them in. And I like you.
Yeah, you can do a couple of clauses under a heading of election integrity. You can do a couple of clauses. I'm sorry, I think I interrupted you. You can do a couple of clauses. You can do, like Josie has a bill on fingerprint ID. So you can put in fingerprint ID, you can put Pianki's separate ballots, you can get rid of Eric, and you can get rid of voting machines all in the same bill. That's not that – those are close enough related. If you have four separate bills, you know, you want all four of those things. So it wouldn't be a bad idea to put them on. But you can do that in one or two pages. That's not a lot of law change to do that.
Okay. Yeah. I just don't want something that's really watered down and have a lot of stuff, because then they're just going to ignore it. But and I would love to get back to line item veto so they can, you know, that's how they blackmail each other up there. Well, if you add this to my bill, I'll add that to your bill. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, they did.
I get,
so line item veto for who, the governor? Governor has line item veto or not.
No, with any of the legislators.
Explain.
Can I explain
your
question?
Yeah, go ahead, Bianca, then I'll get an explanation.
Were you kidding about the gender studies in Zimbabwe? Or is that real?
Yes, absolutely. And I don't remember if it was Zimbabwe, but it was some country. But it was like millions of dollars that they were doing gender studies in a different country.
You know
what's
going on there? Let me tell you how they do that. If you look and see if you have a population of people in your county from their country, and that's how they're trying to communicate to them. You elect me, I get money for your country through this. That's the way these scoundrels do that. If the Cubans, they would say the same thing in order to get a bunch of Cuban support. If you got some other refugees in your country, in your county, or say Afghanistan, well, we want money to cover such and such a thing in Afghanistan, if I'm elected, so that's how they communicate with people, groups of people to come onto their side.
Yeah, but it's such a waste of our tax. I know it would help the people in Zimbabwe or where. I don't know if it would help them or not, but you know,
the money
it's our problems first.
Yeah.
It's your problem.
It's not our problem. It's Zimbabwe's problem.
Exactly.
And he don't
exactly.
care. He's spending your money to
major.
Get elected. Yeah,
yeah,
he's spending the money to get elected.
All right, one at a time, folks. You're as bad as me. Go ahead. Take your turn. It's a talk show. That's what happens. We get enthusiastic. But
that's what's going on. And you got to do the same thing. You got to fight fire with fire. If they use those type of tactics, you got to come up with a tactic also in order to get people on your side.
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm all for fighting fire with fire. In fact, I want to get Project Veritas involved with us again. I had them on the show way too long ago. I want to get them back to hopefully sponsor some investigations and then cooperatively work with them so that what they find in their investigation, we can use and turn that into citizen legislation to fix the problem. See, right now, investigation, this is a problem with journalism. They talk about the story and they tell the story. Look at Andrew Zinzinski, you know, from Open the Books. Brilliant documentation, absolutely fabulous. Doesn't change a thing because he just writes about the problems we already know in excruciating detail. And he's absolutely right with what he writes about. His figures are great. And, you know, I based my disarmament of the federal government, of their unconstitutionally armed bureaucrat armies, based on his study, The Militarization of America. But otherwise, it would just be a study. It wouldn't go anywhere. And so what I want to do is take these studies and take this information from these people and make it go somewhere, turn it into actual legislation. So I post on your messenger the Citizenship ID Act, so you can take a look at that and see what you think. But if you take Pianki's bill, I think should be a separate bill. I would consider that separate. I would present that to your folks, to your team. I got to find out who the team is. I'm kind of curious now. But anyway, that's you can tell me later. The other thing is Josie's bill on fingerprint voter ID. So in other words, not only do you go to the polls with your regular ID, but you do a thumbprint. And if it's good enough for Disney, it's good enough for elections. So she's got a bill that you might want to include too. These are ones that are already written that should be kept separate. And then the Florida Election Integrity Bill that you're going to put together would be a separate bill too. But that can include no ERIC, no voting machines, and I think there's a couple of other things that you mentioned. But they should be in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. Now, what's the timeline?
I'll send them to Redman.
Well, here's the question is the timeline. Well, they only get six bills, and the session starts in January, doesn't it?
Redman said that he probably wouldn't even be – and this was a while ago. He said March, almost March, before he would be putting any bills out.
Oh, maybe so, those sessions later then. All right. Well, talk to him and find out the timeline. See when we have to have bills in by, and is he thinking of sponsoring other bills? Because he only has six. And is one of those six going to be your Florida Election Integrity Act? That would be a good thing to find out. And we should get Joel back on the show. So if you can actually, I would call him today if you can, get a timeline on that, or as soon as you can. And let's find out and then get back to me. And let's say, I want to know what kind of time frame we're working with so that we can get the bill to him in plenty of time for him to, you know, have it printed up and do whatever it is they do in the state legislature. I don't want to miss a deadline. I don't want to have to wait till next year on something we can do this year simply because we didn't check on the timeline.
Well, I would like to have it already wrapped up by January 1st. I mean, that's, I want it in by then.
Fine
so
with me.
So he wouldn't have any excuses.
I'm game. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have much else I'm doing besides Action Radio. It's not that hard to do.
Yeah, I just got to, we got to get the statutes in there. And then I just want common
we'll have the team
English. We're
yeah, you write
normal
the bill.
People. Yeah.
And have your team find
sounds
where
good.
In the law it is, because that's the legal research. So especially if they've done legal research, I learned how to do that. I took some legal studies courses back in college. All this stuff comes in handy, like, you know, 40 years later. It's funny. but that's how I learned how to do a lot of the stuff I do, is I did legal research for college projects and legal studies class. So you find the statute, you find the code, you find exactly where the law is, and you may be adding, you may be just deleting stuff. But chances are you're going to be both deleting and adding, in other words, amending a certain section of law. You can take away the bad language, and we're going to put in the good language. Out with the bad air, in with the good. It's like resuscitation. Out with the bad, in with the good. Sorry.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway.
There's also some I wanted to go into a couple of other things, too.
Yeah, yeah. We got 20 minutes.
Well, we were
going to
talk about
Arizona. Arizona.
Yeah, you wanted to discuss Arizona, too.
That song is. Yeah. Go ahead. Tell me about Arizona.
Well, I know that they started it's like a Project 65 project. Have you heard of that?
Nope. Tell me. What's that?
Okay. That is where, Katie Hobbs right now is, a lot of information has come out about her tweets, and I think we can owe a lot of this to Elon Musk, where he's showing tweets of Katie Hobbs where she posted, there is a picture of it where she is censoring people on Twitter. This is from 2021.
This is the Secretary of State. This is the Secretary of State of Arizona, Katie
Arizona.
Hobbs, who controls the elections, who is censoring people while she's running for governor.
This was in January 2021. Mm-hmm.
She's
and I've
governor.
Got, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it is taking people out online and censoring what they're saying about the election. Hmm. So, and then they started this 65 project, and I just heard about that. I don't know a lot about it yet, but it's basically going after any lawyer and trying to take away their license if they are fighting for election integrity.
Oh, isn't that special? That's like the doctors, you know, the panel in Washington yesterday, Senator Johnson. Friends of mine, Jim Thorpe, who's a doctor in Gulf Breeze. You know, in fact, I'm going to talk to him.
Love Jim Thorpe.
Jim Thorpe was part of our World's Greatest Doctors panel. Jim Thorpe's amazing. I want to know what happened
wonderful.
At that panel, you know, behind the scenes. I'm going to talk about it. And I want to ask if he can contact Senator Johnson or get me somebody that I can contact in his office to get him our vaccine bills and our big tech bills. So I want Jim Thorpe back. Yeah, he's fabulous. But he was there.
And Johnson is one of the few people up in Washington that I actually still trust.
Well, he's the only one of the senators that's pretty good. Then you have the second tier. But there's some, like Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, Rand Paul, except for his wife who invested in Gilead, which produces Remdesivir, that sort of brought him down a bunch. And Ted Cruz are pretty good. But and a few housemates. Well,
Ted Cruz is pretty much a rhino.
And see who is it that's voting for somebody like Katie Hobbs. And I would guarantee you it's a lot of people who shouldn't be voting.
There's a lot of bots. Fake people.
Well, wasn't that, remember that comment on Facebook? Someone said, well, how is it that they can take away votes? I said, they're not taking away votes. They're just changing the numbers. They're just changing the tally. They do it by computer. They hack. Who is it? Herschel Walker lost 20,000 votes at 10 o'clock at night on the first election before the runoff. Gee, how'd that happen?
Yeah.
Well, it's easy. You just program the computer. So not only do you have to get rid of the voting machines, you have to get rid of the voting, you have to get rid of the computer hacking of the actual tallies. That has to be done by phone. That cannot be done, you know, or calling the or something, or publish the results on a website. And then the tallies are done from the website. Yeah, go ahead.
I've got a video of two, this is a video done in 2019, and it's two undergraduates from the University of Michigan, and they show you exactly how to flip the vote inside the machine, how they, mm-hmm. they put a bracket around each name, and then they swap the votes, and they do it very legitimately. I mean, it's like where they actually take the people.
Well, not legitimately, but
it's
not,
actually looks like
yeah.
how they filled in
yeah.
the vote. I mean, they actually use the where it actually filled in the bubble and it looks exactly mm-hmm. like that, but they swapped the names. And then how they did it in Arizona, or part of Arizona anyway, was that they had the regular machines, and I believe they're Dominion out there, but they were 20-inch ballots, and then their printers for Election Day, they only printed up 19-inch ballots. So when they scanned them through, it kicked most of them out. But the ones that it didn't kick out, it actually scanned it to show even if they had voted for it always selected Katie Hobbs, because it got it the way that it put it through, it ended up voting for the wrong person. So, because on Election Day, most of the people that come in to vote on Election Day were Republicans, and most people did the mail-in that had the actual normal-sized ballots were 20-inch ballots. So it heavily favored the Democrats. So, and then
well,
a lot of
it.
The Republicans.
We talked about that from what Dick Morris said, that you have to vote early. You know, the Republicans
yeah.
have to bank their votes
no.
early like Democrats do.
Those ballots need
no.
to be done by hand. That's the only way you're going to get away from that electronic
yes.
stuff.
I don't want any early voting.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
The ballots need to be counted by hand and
yes.
tallied the night of the election. And then
yes.
the total should be called in. You should have three people give the ballot to person number one. He recorded person number two. They recorded person number three. They recorded. After an hour or so, tally up your recordings, and they should match. If they don't, well, the stack of ballots are right there to your right in a pile where you can go back and see where a mistake was made. But that stuff on those machines, they can, even in the transmission, it can be hijacked. Those transmitted packets, I'm sure you don't know how that works, but the packets, it's not a continuous stream of information to go from point A to point B. It's packets that's of a particular size, and they can be hijacked and put right back in after the change has been made.
Yeah. Well, and also if we use it, like when I was talking about last week, if we get like a lottery, like a jury lottery of people that, you know,
can
have
the polls,
defended
yeah.
our country, that like military or first responders, people like that that are getting a pension, and we can put them into a lottery where people don't know who's going to get selected for that. And then I still think we need to videotape all the counting.
Yes, while you're counting, you should have video cameras right there, and also you should have audio that can pick up the speech and the conversation. That should be
yes.
there. Your counters should be like a grand jury. Nobody know who the hell they are. And also, no poll worker should work in the district of their congressperson. They should work someplace else.
That might be interesting. That might be a little a transportation issue. But, Dan, definitely put that in the bill. Put in what you guys are just talking about as far as the videos and things like that. So definitely go over this podcast. Well, there'll be a podcast later. But
well,
when our
right
show's
now,
a podcast.
They won't allow any videotaping at all in the election at all. And, I mean, I thought my poll worker was going to have
crazy.
A heart attack. I wanted to do it's the express vote, and that's the voting machine that the disabled people go and use. And I wanted to just check it out because I was a poll worker. I'd never used it before. I wanted to see how it worked. And I'm sitting there taking a picture of what I selected on the screen, and I thought our clerk was going to have a heart attack. He's like, you can't do that. And I'm like, no, wait a minute. I said, this is my actual vote. You can take a picture of your ballot legitimately. That's really the only time that photography is allowed inside the polling place now. But and I said, how do I know that what's on the screen is going to actually print out on this paper, and how can I prove it if it doesn't? He's like, oh. So he backed off a little bit, but I took a picture
did you get
of
a receipt?
Single screen.
Did you get a receipt from what you...
The Express Vote gives you a receipt, and it prints out exactly... It was perfect. It printed out exactly what I voted.
I'm going to use that machine next time. I'm going to use that. See, I didn't know what... See, that needs to be... So also, all bills have to print... You know, we don't want machines anyway,
you
but...
Need a receipt.
Yeah. What's that?
Well, I don't know that... I don't know that... if we
the
do DS-200 that...
The DS-200 doesn't
if
do
we,
it. I asked for receipts at
know,
the primary...
But,
yeah. Go ahead.
If we're going to do that, then we're going to have machines. If we're going to have something that prints it out that tells you exactly what
that's
you
what
voted,
I was thinking.
Then
yeah, no, that's exactly the point. That if we cannot, this would be like a fallback position. So let's get our first bill through, and if it doesn't work, then our fallback position is okay. Well, if you're going to have machines, then they have to be these kind of machines.
It's going to be like $35,000 a machine to be able to replace any of these things. And I've been told that these machines are basically nothing but just a regular hard drive computer, and it's just software. It's the software that's getting corrupted, and we're paying, you know, and I don't know the exact number, but something like $35,000 a piece for these machines when they're actually really only worth about $5,000. So I think we're really honestly getting ripped off.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, let's get our election supervisor, Tappy Villain of Santa Rosa County, Florida, who is a public figure, so I can say that. Let's get her here on the show if we can, and let's talk about it, because as she explained it to me, that she says that we're required to have these voting machines by state law. So that's something we need to change, too. So let's find it.
Absolutely.
Do you know where it is in state law? Do you know where that is?
Yes.
Okay, good. So then you can put the bill citation. So go to that state law. And what I like to do with all these bills is you publish the language that we're changing so people know what the old law is, and then you put the new law in. So then you put current law. So here's a little subdivision. So basic bill format is introduction, your argument and your the old law, the new law. So your introduction is, or your rationale is, why are we doing this? Why do we need election integrity?
Well,
yeah, exactly. So you write up a little paragraph. Write up what you need that explains why you're doing this bill. So that's your introduction or your rationale. The second part is the laws that you're changing. And if you're doing different parts of this, if we're doing a couple of different points, then you can do it separately. So you're going to say, you're going to have a subheading. This is a section on voting machines. So you're going to say, the old law says this, blah, 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 only the part that's absolutely necessary. We're proposing to scrap that or delete that and replace it with this. And then you write up what you want in its place. That's all legislating is. I mean, people think it's this mysterious process.
Or we just
process.
Write the bill. We put the bill up there, and then we just put a line through the stuff we don't like.
you can, but that's what Jill said. Now,
do
you
understand how they
go ahead,
does she understand how they change that? Let's look at this. Suppose you had a parade that your child is in, your daughter is in. At the starting line, your daughter, you put her on a very beautiful pink dress. Okay, so you go stand in the parade line so you can see your daughter when she come by. When your daughter come by, you see that the pink dress she has on is the fall. So you go out there, grab your daughter, change dresses. Now she put a blue dress on her. And then get her back in the parade, and she proceeds to the finish line. Well, what's happening there is when she started off with a pink dress, and by the time she got to the finish line, she's got on a blue dress. That's what's happening with these counts on these ballots. They start off one thing, and when they get to where they got to go, they have changed to something else. That's how they do it. And that's why, unless the information is encrypted, it's just like your bank information when you bank online. If somebody wanted to steal that, they can steal it between the time that you punch a key on your laptop, on your keyboard, until the information travels to the bank, unless it's encrypted special. Now, these voting apparatuses are not doing it. That's what allows these information, these tallies, to be changed the way they are. That's how Herschel Walker lose 20,000 votes within minutes and so on. It's got to go back to manual counting until you get this stuff straightened out. And you know what I would also do if I was anybody is get a hold of some of these young people that know how to hack and do a demonstration. Start off at the polling place.
It's already been done. I've seen a video on that.
Start off
exactly.
At the polling place and have somebody at the point where the information is received and tell them, hey, we're going to start you off here. We're going to send 10,000. Can you change it to 20,000 to where it's going to be received? They can do it. And that there is a good demonstrator to show unknowledgeable people exactly what's going on.
That's what I said in my paperwork to Rudman and to Broxton and to Andrade. The first, I couldn't run a video that night, but I sent them the link to the two undergraduates from Michigan showing exactly how they flipped the votes inside the ES&S machine. And that's what we have here, the ES&S. So I sent them that, and then I also sent them the when you in Dallas, and I don't know if I talked about this last week, but where you come in and you check in, there was a woman that was videotaping her. Ours are called even machines. I think theirs were called poll books. But she was videotaping her poll book, and she had 400 people that were voting, that had voted that day, and it showed it on the computer, on her machine, her poll book. And she was showing all four of the machines that checked in their voters for their center, and the machine started, the count started jumping up like they had 100 voters in 5 minutes. And the counts were just jumping and jumping and jumping, and she's discussing this, and I've got this all on video. And this was in Dallas. And so I sent that video, or I wrote that video into my paperwork for them to see that as well. So it's like you can watch them flipping the votes in real time and adding votes to the system. And I think that also I talked about the Red Valley Road issue last time where they're changing the addresses, and they do the mail-in ballots, and they can start adding those in too if they see the counts are too low. So,
well, they add in people, then they take them off. They add them to the rolls, make them vote, have those votes count, then they take them off again so that you can't trace it.
Well, what they're doing is actually is they're taking the addresses and they're changing the address just slightly, so enough to where it won't get to the people's home for 2 weeks. And they're only changing the address for the SOE's office, for the voter registration. So you're still getting all your other mail. You're just not getting anything from the SOE's office.
Secretary of Elections.
Secretary of Elections, yes.
Yeah.
And so then they request two mail-in ballots for those changed addresses. So as soon as those mail-in ballots arrive undeliverable back to the post office, then they flip the address back to the right address. So no one ever even notices what's happened. And then they have all these thousands of mail-in ballots that they can sign and send in whenever they want. And that has to be done more ahead of time because it has to get, well, I don't know, some places aren't, they don't care about the dates on the ballots. That's happened in multiple states where they're letting tons of, that won't happen in our county, though. I can assure you, I've watched, our county does a really good job of making sure that the ballots only come in at a certain time, and then that's it, and that they check all the signatures and they kick out the ones that don't match. So our county is actually really good about that. But there's so many different ways for them to cheat. We're finding out.
Yeah, our county is actually not bad, but we still want them better.
Absolutely. And I just want to know if the machines have cheated in 2020 and in 2022. Now, we actually have a team. Tappy has agreed, and she saved the 2020 ballots from November 2020, and we're going to actually get to count them. We have a team that's actually going to get to go count some of the races from that to see if
counting,
it's going to be legitimate.
Yeah. No, I'm really curious to see the results of the post-2020 audit. Well, see, now I've just...
But this doesn't mean that they didn't cheat in 2022 in the primary or the regular. That is not going to tell us if they're still cheating now. And so that's what... I just can't ever trust the machines because you never know if they're cheating. We will always have to go old school. I mean, I don't know of a way that you can ever do it any different. The people that those two, the guys from University of Michigan, and they were talking about how you could scan the ballots. They can change it, the vote, flip the votes before it's even scanned. So they can cheat that way as well. That's a very fascinating video if you guys want to watch it.
You know another thing, too.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
You got to ask who's doing this. It's not the candidate. It's not necessarily the local polling place. It's the political party that has came in cahoots with somebody, and that's where all this begins.
The vendor has to be able. The vendor's the one that's got the key to be able to make the software changes on that. But I don't know who it is.
The vendor is working for the political party. The political party is the only one that's got the type of money that somebody would charge to do this. I mean, crooks don't do things for nothing. So it's the political party that's talking to somebody. Comes to the political party and say, "Look, in a Starbucks cafe, we can help you win this election, but it's going to cost you this." And that's how it begins. It's not the candidate. Yeah. Candidate is dumb as a rock in all cases. It's the political party.
Well, I think it's even more than that, because I think it's both of our political parties at this point.
This is the point I wanted to make, is that shall we write a bill that eliminates membership in a political party while you're serving in the state legislature? I think that's seriously worth looking into.
Yeah. Well,
not today, but
I was thinking about that too, about how I know that's a whole nother rabbit hole. That would
be a big one.
That's
a warthog hole. That's a much bigger.
Well, you get so many write-in voters if you don't declare a party and you don't have a primary. You just would have so many people put in their names that it would dilute it
You can still do petition drives. You can still do petition drives. What it'll do is it'll allow a Green Party or a Libertarian or a Constitution or a Christian Party or any party or a Tea Party. It would give them much more access to the ballot. See, right now, the whole purpose of two parties is to exclude everybody else, because they have the money. They control the ballots. What law is it that you only have Republicans and Democrats on ballots? That's absurd. You know, or debates. It's always the Republicans and the Democrats. And, maybe we'll throw in the alternative parties. No, I don't think you should be able to run from a party. Now, should parties exist? Absolutely. They can raise and spend all the money they want on behalf of candidates, but you should not be able to belong to a party. And, of course, that would also go for the majorities in the state legislatures and in Congress for committees. Everybody should have to be voted on individually to run those committees. And you'd have former Democrats and former Republicans and maybe some Greens and Libertarians and et cetera, et cetera. But you wouldn't have one party controlling Congress. It would be, they'd actually be individually represented again, which is the way it's supposed to be. Parties are actually a tyranny. And so I want to remove party membership while you're in office. But before you're in office, sure. But the minute you declare as a candidate, you're going to give up that thing. Now, obviously, we're going to know who was who for a while, but eventually. But as long as you can't count that in terms of committee chairs, they might build coalitions within, but there's no loyalty once they're in office to a party. No reason to. Should be interesting. We got to talk further about that.
Should be that way. I don't know.
Well, then we can do it. Hey, listen, we can write so we can write any bill that we want. So the last thing you ever want to concern yourself with is it going to pass? Is this possible?
Yeah.
Is this something that the government's going to go for? That's irrelevant to us. Okay, that does not matter.
Oh, yeah.
Because I want to know what we want. Then we'll worry about, who's against us. But if you want to write a bill that says that nobody can belong to a political party during the time that they're running for office and serving in office, I don't care who's for it or against it at this point. I want to write that bill. That's a good bill. Then we'll worry about it.
Yeah.
Don't declare. Yeah. Don't surrender until the battle's at least been fought. and this is the biggest problem with the geldings, the gelding old party. They surrender immediately. Now, here's a prediction for you. We should go in a couple of minutes, but I made a prediction that between now and January 1st, the Democrats are going to sneakily, when nobody's looking, overturn just enough House seats so they'll be the majority party by New Year's Day. What do you think?
No, that wouldn't surprise me not one bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, or they're so convinced that McCarthy's one of them, part of the deep state, that they don't have to worry about it, like Paul Ryan. So either way, they win. The deep state wins. It's like heads I win, tails you lose. They've got the fix in. Let me ask you both this question. So in our closing minutes, well, actually we're overtime right now. In our overtime minutes, do you think the Republicans are going to have the House overturned illegally, like they did in 2018, or are the Democrats not going to worry about it because Kevin McCarthy is a deep state member anyway? Diane?
I have no idea.
Oh, come on, make a prediction.
I worry that we got a lame duck presidency right now, and I worry that they're going to just start.
We've got a lame duck.
They're going to start doing some really wild stuff. I do worry about that, but I know that bill that's up at the Supreme Court right now. The guys from Utah.
On what?
They
what's
are
the
trying.
Issue?
It is actually, it would remove a whole lot of our legislators and Biden. And it was about the election for 2020 and the insurrection, and that they illegally didn't allow for the election fraud to be seen. And that's at the Supreme Court now waiting to be seen. And a lot of channels that I've been listening to, they're hopefully that they will come to a decision on that soon. And it would help remove a whole lot of the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's hope.
Lots of prayers for that one to pass.
Yeah. See, well, send me an article on that so I can research it, and I'll present that myself. I love doing Supreme Court stuff. Bianchi, go ahead.
Courts can't overthrow no election. That has to be done with the state legislature. That's why come the suits from Texas early on in 2020, then nobody want to hear it. They don't want to get involved in that. That has to go back to the state legislature. That's what people have been claiming, that the 14th Amendment was not ratified because there wasn't enough people in attendance at the time. And the courts have said, well, the Congress itself, the legislative body, has to deal with that. And which is easy to do, is I like it that way. The states can look at this on their own. They're the one that control the electors. You don't need the Supreme Court unless people just feel happy with the 9 justices, making it feel like they're welcome. You know, there's some articles that's talking about how hackers, these articles are even on CNN, how hackers are stating, hey, yeah, you know, your voting tallies can be compromised from the point of inception to the point of destination. Nobody pays no attention to it. If CNN is printed, you know it's got to be something to it.
Well, that's why we need to get the commission done. Hey, listen, let's hold it for today. Let's pick this up next time. But, two reports down. Isn't this fun, Diane? You having a good time yet?
Yeah, I am enjoying it. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Wonderful. All right. So you're just getting started. This is going to get much more interesting, especially as Bianchi has bills. I have bills. We'll get Josie on, too, at some point, and she can tell you about her fingerprint ID bill, which would be very good also. So, Diane, conclusions. Anything we should be watching? Any news for the following week? Any predictions as to how the geldings are going to surrender? What do you say at this time? Or any groups that you want to tell folks to support other than Action Radio? I'll do that.
Action Radio. It's awesome. Huh? No, if anyone gets any information on any hacking or cheating or, you know, send it to us, send it to Action Radio, print it on so we can have, you know, the more ammunition that we have, that we want to be able to take it and change our legislation. So please help. Reach out if you'd like to join in and help us.
I have an idea I just thought of. Mm-hmm. Would you help if I started yet another group? This would be, I think, 21 or 22, an election integrity group that people can specifically post stories directly related to election integrity. That way we wouldn't have to go through my email. It'd be right there, and you can communicate directly with people and get more information. Sound
That'd
good?
Be awesome.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
That was easy. Action Radio, taking action yet again. So that's what we do. That's what we do here. I got to get used to. Yeah, I have to start actually putting our groups ahead of time that can support us. So givesendgo.com/actionradio will work, and also paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. So anything of these groups /actionradio, you'll be able to contribute and help our efforts here to build a bigger legislature, a bigger marketing campaign, and keep the lights on. You know, all that kind of stuff, as they say. Diane, okay for this week? Should we do it next week? Any other conclusions
absolutely.
Or things to watch?
Wait, what is next week? We're rolling into Christmas pretty quick, huh?
Well,
so
let me look at my calendar.
16th,
next Thursday
the
is 16th. The 14th. It's 14th. Yeah. Probably
not
doing anything
about it.
Yeah, 15th. You can do the 14th, can't you? We have a hot date. I'm just teasing you.
It's the 15th, dear.
Oh.
Right?
You're right, it is. It's the 15th. Okay. I stand corrected.
You got your 2023 calendar up.
I could.
Yeah,
no,
I can
actually,
do the
2022. 15th. I just read it wrong. I thought for some reason this was Wednesday, but don't ask me why I thought that. Okay, so Thursday the 15th.
It's been a long week.
You know what? Seriously though, I call it the adrenaline dump. When I prepare for an interview like David Stockman, okay, this starts days ahead of time,
and I have to, you know, I'll put a bunch of stuff on, I'll take a bunch of stuff off. No, I can't talk about that. Yes, I can't talk about this. And then, of course, the actual interview, I want to make sure I do a good job. And I think today went pretty well. But there's such an adrenaline drop after an interview like that, that I'm basically on fumes at this point. So I'm not able to say anything.
Need some coffee. Yeah, I can do the 15th and I can do the 22nd. I'm not sure I'll be available for the 29th, though.
Yeah,
so that'll
I don't
be
expect much to happen between Christmas and New Year's. I might just take that week off. You never know. Yeah. Crazy things have happened. Oh, I'll just write a bunch of bills. And go, hey, look what I did. Hey, teacher, look what I did.
Yeah, we'll get them in before the 1st. Yeah.
Well, let me know about that, too. That's the most important thing right now is get a hold of Joel Rudman and get the calendar, and that'll go for the other representatives, too. And some of them, like Andrade, may already have his 6. But Broxson can put as many – he's the state senator. He can put in as many bills as he wants. So he's not limited by that. Was he amenable?
I'm not. I don't see us getting any help from him. I really don't.
Okay.
You know who might actually help is J.R. Williamson. I could reach out to him and see if he would – like, I don't know if he'd be amenable to help or not. But he might
Michelle
be
Saltzman?
A possibility.
How about Michelle Saltzman that's over in Escambia? Okay, I know her pretty well. And here's one thing, too. Do you have contacts in Matt Gaetz's office? Because we need him back on the show.
No. But he might help. I don't know. I do. I know some people that know him.
Oh, good. Well, I know him directly, but he doesn't come on my show. You know, he's doing other stuff. So we got to get him back on here. He used to be on the show. I mean, how can we give him all these great ideas if he's not here talking to us? You know, I'm not doing this for ratings, folks. I'm doing this because it's the best way to get our work done. That's what this is all about. But I'd love to have, well, maybe not Doug, but I'd love to have certainly Joel on the show. Alex Andrade has never been on the show. He's welcome. If you can get Broxson, that'd be great. And get J.R. Williamson. He's my representative. I don't know why he isn't. I've asked him enough times. You know, let's make regular visitors of these people so they can start talking to us. That'd be good.
Well, and now that he's not a representative, he might be able to talk more freely, too.
Oh, that's for sure.
But
why do you think I never run for office? Do you think I could say what I say if I was in office? No. Hell no.
No.
I'd have no freedom. Yeah. So the reason I'm never going to run for office. I do not aspire to be in office because I couldn't do any of the legislators don't legislate. You know, Action Radio hosts do. I can make that a bumper sticker.
And lobbyists.
Yeah. Lobbyists. Well, you're a lobbyist now. You're a citizen legislator. What do you think? You're actually working on your first bill.
Woohoo.
Yeah, let's give you a go.
Hopefully you can get something passed.
Yeah, let's make the big announcement. And now, our latest citizen legislator, Diane Warner. Okay, now it's official.
No, awesome. I feel official.
Good. I'm out of here. Thank
you
all.
I'm going to go ask Santa for a Yeti Blue microphone now.
Oh, you remember that. Good. Did you write that down? Yeti Blue microphone.
Yes, I did.
Okay, good. Sounds good. And all the other things we talked about, get them
from
the podcast.
Thanks,
Greg. You're welcome, Diane. Thank you, Bianchi, too. I'm out of here. This has been amazing. I want to go listen to my own interview with David Stockman. That was incredible. Again, if you want to help us out here, we've got several products, Great Care, MyPillow, Strikeforce Energy, and these other folks here. And the discount code is always the same, WYL. That is our discount code here. We also have givesendgo.com for Action Radio, our GiveSendGo account, and PayPal me. / Action Radio also. And so that'll help us as well. A couple things to play, and then we are done for today. Back tomorrow morning, Friday at 6 o'clock. That's our early day, Friday, 6 a.m. Central Time.
Isn't it Friday already?
This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. Yes, Bianchi, tomorrow is Friday. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.